Welcome to the Carpcast. Introducing the two biggest nods that don't use chods. They're old, grumpy, and they're pretty opinionated. Here's your hosts, it's Mark and Jamie.
So hello and welcome to episode 71, 74, or 57, isn't it? It's 57 this one.
Are you getting confused with your numbers? Do you not listen at maths at school?
All I've heard for the last 24 hours is 70 or 74. They're the only figures that have been in my head for quite some time. As you will probably know why. The internet has been broken. My news feed gets full of stuff from time to time, you know, if anything big's going on in the world, if there's a terrorist bomb somewhere, the news feed is, you know, 85% discussing whatever that topic is, or, you know, Saturday night, sometimes it could be X Factor or something. 100% of my news feed on Facebook yesterday was about this new British record carp. There was no pulse in between. It was 100%. I've never seen anything like that in the past. I'm sure yours is the same, was it?
Pretty much, yeah. Apart from the odd bit from the old wrestling or heavy metal things that I've subscribed to, it was all about this fish. And quite entertaining it was, if I'm all to be honest. I even made a post myself saying I'm off leaving the lake to go get some popcorn.
Yeah, it certainly brought the passion out in people. We'll move on to our opinions of this situation. First of all, the captor is somebody we know well, somebody who came on our first Carpcast. I'd like to think it's Carpcast Run Good, you know, come on a Carpcast social. By the way, the next one's on Christchurch Lake in the autumn, and that is fishing its head off. One chap had 340s out there last week, but more on Christchurch in a little bit. But yeah, it was Tom Doherty. I don't never know how you spell that name when it's just got an H and no CH. Tom Doherty. Yeah, ask him, because I know you spoke to him earlier. You spoke to him yesterday as well, and he's going to come on, we think. He's feeling the trolls a little bit. I mean, when you spoke to him yesterday, I mean, he made a very honest and comment that you just can't argue with, didn't he?
Yeah, he's got to be quote of the year. He said something like, all I did was cast out and catch a fish.
Yep, it's not his fault this fish was in this lake in particular. And, well, I mean, it's not the fish's fault, and it's not anybody's fault. The fact is, I spoke to Rob Hales today for the 1% of anglers that don't know what's going on. So,
is it? I think it's 0.1.
Point one, yeah. A fish has been caught on Rob Hales's Avenue, a lake that's previously done 50-pound carp. It done a decent 50 that went 60, I believe, didn't it? And then died. It's done 50-pounders since. I know it did a 50-pounder earlier this year. And it's now done a 70-pound. Well, it's been weighed on two different sets of scales. One said 69.4, one said 70.4. And no one of those sets of scales has gone off to the to be checked. And the other set is being checked today. So by the end of today, we're recording this on Tuesday. It's Tuesday the 20th of September. By the end of today, the official weight will be available for all to see. Either way, it's going to be bigger than previously caught. This fish has been caught from the Avenue. Everybody's jumped on straight away, or it's been flown in from abroad. It's been in there a few days.
So much misinformation.
I mean, it does show the passion of people. I don't quite understand. This was always going to happen. I spoke to Rob Hales in person today, and we're going to put the interview out next week for one reason and another. But, you know, I have the information from the horse's mouth, the facts about what has happened with this fish. Rob's had this fish nearly 5 years. He bought it, as he regularly does. He buys the largest fish he can possibly buy from a UK supplier. He has to auction for these fish. Sometimes he has to bid for them, and he either gets them or he doesn't. He bought this fish as of one of three fish, which are all 30-pound carp. I think there was a 33, a 34 and a 39 from memory, or 34, 35 and 39. There's basically three fish to 39 that he bought. He handpicks these fish. He pays decent money for them, and then he puts them in one of his numerous lakes. These fish lived in the Little Avenue for a while, which is the smaller version, a lake which you can fish on these complexes. He had to remove it, or these fish, from this lake. He had some issues there with pumps and stuff, and ended up moving into one of his breeding ponds. He is a fish breeder and supplier. He grows his own fish. He has many fish that are, you know, that are spawn of some of these large fish, and you know, and he's grown many English 30s, 40s and 50s as well, true English, born in this country. So as we know, there are no true English strains. You know, even the Redmire fish were imported from I believe it was Holland. Was it Holland or Belgium? You know, the leanies were not English fish. They were brawn. Yes, they were brought small. He buys these fish. He tries to grow them on. He does feed them in lakes. You know, in the Little Avenue, he told me, is a lake that he regularly grows his fish on in. And he did have to move it into a different one of his breeding ponds. It does have automatic feeders in there. The fish were fed just the same as he's fed the others. This fish was a bit special. It grew way more than all the others. The other two fish that he bought in mid-30s have put on about £5, he said, in the same amount of time, which is just short of 5 years. I think it was 2011 he purchased these fish. And again, he had an issue where he needed to get these fish out of that particular lake. He was going to stock them into the Avenue in November, regardless of anything. They were destined for that lake. He had to move them out a bit sooner because of issues with some equipment down there. And they've been in this lake 5 weeks. The two smaller fish, as I said, have only put on about £5 since he purchased them. And this other one's grown pretty damn fast. And 5 weeks they've been in this lake and it's been caught. He reckons they've, you know, it's not fed for a bit. They do get shocked and lose weight normally when they get moved. Sometimes they never ever regain the lake that the weight that they were in the stocking lake or the breeding lake. Sometimes they never ever get back to that weight. But he does seem to think this one's a bit special and is an absolute flyer. And it's been caught at £70 at a bit. We'll find out what the true weight of that is later, once the scales have been checked. But they're the facts. Whatever people are saying, I've seen pictures of, you know, people have mocked up with a helicopter flying in a, you know, a very large foreign fish. First of all, they bought these fish at £30. Some people might say that's too big. They're the facts. I mean, what's your initial thoughts on all this, Mark?
My initial thoughts, I've got to be honest, are, well, fair play to Tom. He's caught himself a great big fish, and it affects my life in no way whatsoever.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, unless you're actively, you know, sat on Wazing or somewhere fishing for a British record, I don't see why anybody could, you know, could get mildly upset. I mean, we'll go into some of the trolling and the, you know, downright disgusting stuff that I've read on Facebook over the last 24 hours. Some of it's just plain internet bullying. It's out of order. I mean, I saw one comment, you saw it as well, Mark, that said something along the line of, this cunt is everything that's wrong in fishing. Well, no.
Do we have to use the C word on this podcast?
Whoever wrote that, we're not going to name shame on here, but you're everything that's wrong in fishing. You are what's bad about this fishing. How can you demean someone's capture? They, you know, as Tom said himself, he cast out and he caught a fish. You know, he's joined this lake to catch some decent fish. This fish had been put in there. You know, he'll have already had his ticket before this fish got put in. He wouldn't, you know, he's not joined the lake to catch a 70-pounder that's just been thrown in. And he's caught what's in front of him. Fair play. He's happy. Big smile. His fat smiling face on the picture says everything you need to know. And if you think he's the C word for, and he's everything that's wrong in fishing, for, you know, joining a beautiful syndicate in Shropshire and catching a, you know, what's out there swimming about in front of him. No, you're everything that's wrong in fishing. You're the sort of person that gives this sport a bad name. You're the sort of person that takes away people's enjoyment. It's, you're everything that's wrong in fishing. That makes me angry.
Yeah, some of the dafter comments that I'll just bring up that we spoke about on the phone earlier. Someone declaring that carp fishing is ruined. I beg to differ, because I woke up in my bivvy this morning, my rods were still out in there, and I seen a fish bosh out, and it wasn't ruined, it was still there, it still existed.
I hope it's still there when I go fishing next week, because it's certainly not going to affect a 70 pounder getting caught in Shropshire. It's not going to affect me going fishing next week.
No, and there's another comment which I think maybe should get us both worried, that some idiots put on as the carp fishing industry has devastated all to us. Basically, the carp fishing industry is finished. So that's it. Podcast's over. My job in the shop is under threat. You know, you're going to have to rethink your northern show. It'll be a match show now.
Yeah, I mean, if you own a carp fishing lake, you might as well just sell it. I mean, what good is it now? A 70-pounder has been caught in Shropshire. I mean, you know, what's the point in the carp industry anymore? Let's just shut it down now. Right, should we switch this off? Yeah, one sec, I'll stop it.
Yeah.
Idiots everywhere. Some of these people should not be allowed to breed. That's my, you know, they are breeding wrong'uns, because you've clearly dim.
What is a wrong'un? Yeah. In your opinion, what is a wrong'un?
A wrong'un is most of these comments I've read on different levels. There's two issues here, right? Yeah, as I see it, there's an issue of somebody catching a big fish. Right now, there are lots of lakes. You know, there were lakes such as Strawberry Fields that were, you know, legally importing very large fish, and people have fished for them for many, many years. Home Fen have done exactly the same thing. They bought fish from the same supplier. They've grown them on. That lake was going to do a fish that surpassed the British record sooner or later, you know, and probably still will grow a 70 within the next couple of years. That Captain Jack in there is going massive, as are a lot of fish behind it. Eric's Willows, you know, five or six different 50 pounders in Eric's Willows, with two that I know of that are 57 plus. That's just a sign of the times. You know, they purchase fast growing fish. The dink strain that were brought into this country that are now considered, you know, true blue English fish, you know, the dink strain, you know, what lakes are full of dinks? Dinton, was it? Did Dinton have a load of dinks?
One, Baston Fen had some lovely ones in, and you can't forget our favourite dink, the twin from Pit 2 at Elstow, which was actually purchased from a garden centre and more likely legally imported before that.
Yeah, these are all fast growing. German, are they a dink strain? Are they German? Or Dutch?
I think so. I mean, dink, is it short for Dinkschabulger or something?
Dinkschabulger, something like that, wasn't it?
It sounds German anyway.
Yeah, these are all, because they've been around a while, these are all fish that have been, you know, that are all considered proper fish in the UK. They were imported because they are fast growing fish. You know, Donald Leaney just happened to pick a really nice strain that was quite scaly, you know, fully scaled and linear, that didn't grow particularly fast, except for the commons, which you know, grew really well in Redmire and other lakes, and they stood the test of time. Some of them are 60 plus years old, but just because they're prettier than the others, does that make them more English or more packer, as the southerners would say? I mean, the two issues here are catching large fish. You know, people want to catch big fish. These lakes wouldn't be spending this extreme amounts of money on these very large fish, spending ridiculous amounts of money. You know, you don't think these fish get this big by just throwing them in a pond and leaving them. You know, it's extreme fishery management that gets these fish to this side. And, you know, people wanting to fish for extremely large fish is something that, you know, maybe we're all responsible for. You know, the fact that we have records, the fact that we have magazines and you know, big up anglers for catching large fish. That's why people want to catch big fish. That's one issue. The second issue is, should it be called a British record? Now, these two issues are not connected. My opinion is there is nothing, you can't tell people what they can enjoy. You can't tell people what to fish for. You should not be putting people down for wanting to fish Home Fen or the Avenue or the Monument or any, you know, the Acton Burnells, the Ringsteads, the Darents of the world. You know, if people want to fish that and get enjoyment out of it and catch these fish, great. Should these fish be considered a British record? That's a different subject. If I caught this fish, if I'd gone onto the Avenue this week and caught a 71 pounder, 72 pounder, an 80 pounder, who knows, would I be claiming it as a record? Probably not.
If you'd not got a ticket, you'd be kicked off.
Yeah, I might have poached it. But would I claim it as a record? No, I wouldn't. But that's personal. That's to me. You know, I've always had a slight issue with manufactured big fish waters, and they are manufactured. I'm not saying people shouldn't fish for them, and I don't think bad of anything anybody would fish for them, and I would probably fish. If I got a guest on one of these lakes, I'd certainly go. Or if I just want a week with the lads, or I'm, you know, going on a social with me mate, we'd maybe consider fishing one of these types of lakes. You know, it's great buzz to go and catch some big fish without having to go to France or wherever. But if I happen to catch something as a British record, would I feel it was an achievement as, you know, spending 3 years hunting the twin, or you know, one of the other big fish that I've caught, or the Burfield Common, or would I consider it the same? Definitely not. It's holiday fishing to me, fishing those sort of places. Day ticket lakes, you know, these type of guest waters where you can book a lake for a week, it's holiday fishing, and would be classed as such. You know, I don't think I've ever put one of the big fish I've caught from abroad in the press ever. You know, that holiday fishing, and you know, setting out to hunt a particular carp, a large fish or whatever, two different types of fishing. I enjoy them both. There's nothing more I'd like to go on Home Fen and have 4 40s and a 50 and the big one at 60. I'd love it. Would I claim it's a record, or would I you know, put it all over the press, or would I write magazine articles about it claiming what a great angler I am? Probably not. No. But it doesn't mean I wouldn't enjoy going catching them. Fishing's fun. Like, we do it because we enjoy it. It's not a competition. You know, the fact that Tom's caught a 70 pound carp, people have like took it personally. What people are thinking, you know, oh wow, the guy's out of order, Rob Hales is out of order, the lakes are out of order, it's all wrong guns, it must have come in on a boat ferry. I've heard some ridiculous stuff this week. People saying it was stocked 5 days ago. It's ridiculous. You can clearly see from the pictures of that fish. It's the same as the Home Fen fish. You know, everybody knows where they've come from. And if you want to, you know, is it as credible as, you know, hunting down an unknown 50 that's just popped up somewhere? It's totally different. You can't compare them. And who has the right to say what's right and what's wrong? I don't think anybody does. That's my rant. Is that a decent Jamie's rant?
Jamie's rant!
Yeah, there's a bit of a rant. Though, do you want a little bit more, a bit of background of the fish, which I've managed to get. Well, again, we like dealing in facts, and there has been a lot of fiction around. But as far as I can gather, it was imported in 2009 as a 20. Sold to Rob Hales, as you say, and then grown on. But it also, when it was a 20, it was a C5. Well, C5 in 09, sorry. That makes it 12 summers old at the end of this summer. That is a freak indeed.
It is a freak, yeah. And
that is as genetic colossus.
As Rob says in the interview, it is a freak. He said he considers himself very lucky to have found one of these freaks. You know, he handpicks these fish in the hope that one of them does something really special. He said that, you know, he's 51 years old. He's always had a dream to grow the British record, and he would have had the British record a few years ago if he hadn't have lost the fish. He grew a 62-pounder that was a flyer himself, and he had issues with it, as he says in his interview, which we will play out next week. It'll be on the next show. You know, and this is no surprise. Him. He can't believe the fuss about this, because he grew a fish that was going to be a British record some time ago, and it died, unfortunately. But you know, this was always going to happen. I've spoke to Kevin Nash at length. You know, Kevin's had exactly the same dream. It's what he's tried to do with the church and the cops, is to try and make the perfect environment for fish to grow. He also believed that he grew a fish that was a good 70, and unfortunately it never got caught at that weight. And he believes it's dead now. that fish. But he reckons at its peak it was over £70. And he said on the podcast, he would have never claimed it as a record. He just wanted to prove that you could grow a fish in England. He did it with an English fish from England, grew it in optimal circumstances, and just to see how big they could go as a fish breeding exercise more than anything. But he did say he wouldn't claim it as a record. Now, I can understand some people, having a disagreement with this being the record fish. But at the end of the day, I don't think you can tell people what to do. It's a fish caught on rod and line in the UK, fish that's clearly lived here since 2009. I mean, there are many fish that haven't grown this big that were stocked, that were legally imported with papers, upper doubles, mid doubles, 20s, that have grown on to be big, just not quite as big as this, that nobody's got a problem with, people happily fish for. So is it just the fact it's £70, the first ever 70, and people would have liked it to be a classic fish, a fish with a bit more history? Well, we don't always get what we choose. The world isn't idyllic, sadly. It would have been nice, if a fish that was tracked come up in a nice history lake, a Raisby or a Yateley or something. But that's not the real world. The real world is this. What's happened? There's a market out there for large fish. These are strains that have been proved to have grown very big. And as I say, we've seen what's happened in other lakes like Home Fen and stuff, and there. Rob's been lucky to have grown one this size in his lakes. It's obviously a testament to how well he keeps his fisheries. That's it. I think we've gone on enough. But anybody that's writing hateful and hurtful comments, then you are everything that's wrong in fishing. You can have an opinion that it shouldn't be a British record. That's fine. I completely agree with that. And my personal opinions is, it probably shouldn't be a British record. It's not an instant big fish. I mean, it's took Rob 5 years in optimal circumstances. And the fish is a pretty unique one. It's one that's acted different. The other two fish that he bought at the same time have only put about £5 on, he said. So,
Do you think it's a bully? It's eating all the food, it's beat the others up. The others might grow now, he's in there.
Yeah, very
possible. Has he got that, what do they call it, that Prader-Willi syndrome, where people just, they're full but they can't stop eating, they feel hungry all the time?
Maybe. I mean, as we've discussed many times, and as I discussed with Rob, quite often when a big fish dies, another one takes its place anyway, a fish that hadn't really ever shown those sizes. So it'll be interesting to see if something else comes through anywhere close to that size at any point in the same lake. But it was quite a refreshing on this interview with Rob, and like I say, we will play it next week.
I'm looking forward to not just hearing that, but we're just reading all about it, because we know Carp Talk have got obviously a big feature on it. But there's one thing I did on the Twitter today, because you can do polls and that on there now, so I thought I'd just see what the general consensus of what people thought about this fish, should it be claimed as a record or not. So I asked that question, and have you seen that? What do you think?
I haven't seen it. No, I mean, I would suspect that most people would be voting no.
Yeah, well, I put three options: accepted, refused, or record abolished. Now, I'm looking at it now, 131 votes, so it's quite a few. 29% said it should be accepted, 53% said refused, and 18% said record abolished. I don't think the record should be abolished. I think there should be records kept of what carp are caught in this country. As for it accepted or refused, I think mention should should be in the record books, but with the asterisk at the side of it, explaining that the circumstances. And then everyone should move on with their lives and go fishing. Enjoy it.
Yeah, I'm interested to see what happens if it is claimed as a record. I don't see how the British Rod and Fish Committee can deny it. There are records of this fish, there are pictures, it's legally purchased. The suppliers have documents for this fish. It's traced back as small as £20, as you found out, you spoke to somebody involved with the suppliers. So I don't see how it can be refused. If it's claimed, you know, I don't see on what grounds it could be refused on. You know, how's it any different to I don't know how big the Redmire fish went in, but I know they were purchased from abroad. I mean, how's it any different if they went in at £12, this one was bought at 19, 20? You know, there's many big fish been that are considered fine that were in stock, that was, you know, the Kent Riverboard fish. A lot of those were doubles, up to upper doubles, you know, which were, you know, purchased from other countries. Is it the fact that it's just, you know, these fish are believed to start their origins in Israel? Is it a race thing where we, you know, Croatians are right but Israelis aren't, or Croatians are not all right but the Germans and Belgians are? I mean, is it just
we don't want to go down that road, because if we go down into bloody British history, this country has been invaded by Normans, Vikings, Romans that many times. We're all mongrels, so that argument doesn't hold.
And we've colonised just about every country that's got something to offer in the world. We went out and colonised them and took their stuff. So,
and their women.
Yeah, and their women, yeah. So, you know, we are certainly no angels as in English. But anyway, let's put this one aside. We'll address it next week, because we'll have Rob on. I believe you spoke to Tom in a bit, and if we get a chance, we'll throw that interview in this episode, if we get the interview in time. But in the meantime, DNA Baits is somebody that has supported us from day one. You can get an extra discount off all the excellent DNA products using the code CARPCAST5 when you check out. There's a little box there. You put the code in, get an extra 5% discount on all their stuff on their website, including the fantastic liquids that they sell. We've had a show on the Hydro Wheat and Beta Stim where Mark Holmes was talking about using them to catch some fish, some very large fish, up to 60 pounds, with great success. They do all sorts of post-free deals. They do a 50k boilie deal, which is 50 kilos of freezer bait. You can split it into different sizes, get a pot of matching cork dust wafters, pot of cork dust pop-ups, and a litre of Hydro Wheat or Beta Stim, £320 delivered direct to your door. There's 10 key boilie deals with different options, different pop-ups, hook baits, liquids, etc. If you go on their website, dnabaits.com, you can find all this stuff. There's various different post-free deals, and extra discounts can be had off their already decent prices, and they have some superb boilies out there. A lot of people I know use the S7. There's the new one this year, there's a switch. They've got a great choice, and you'll find it on their website, dnabaits.com. What's next, Mark? You seen anything else on the net?
I don't think there was room for anything else on the net.
No, not on my news feed. Although something we didn't mention last week that we probably should have done, you can join the Carp Society now.
It's on the net. It must be true.
You can. Yeah, things, as we know, they're changing all the time with the Carp Society. And yes, you can now become a member any time of year. And I believe the membership, £25, starts from when you join. You'd have to wait for the window in January, and then have to be approved at a next meeting, as was the case under the old regime. But you know, in the interview we've got this podcast with Jules, he does make a good point when it is mentioned, because we do have a brief chat about the Carp Society, and you know, he says he's not going to join himself until the court case is settled and he knows whose coffers his money is going in. I can't argue with that, can you?
I can't, no. I do believe that the old regime have been told legally that they can't use any Carp Society funds to fight this court case, which I presume means the money that they'd already taken out of the account and put aside to the solicitors to defend it, that they'll probably either not be able to use or have to pay back currently. And the fact that they've already changed some of the Carp Society rules that are put in place by the old regime, i.e. you can only join for a couple of weeks in January, the fact that these have been changed, it's kind of saying to me that the legal stand is with the new regime. The fact that they've been allowed to change some of these things put in by the old regime says that the law is now recognising the new regime, because I don't think they'd have been allowed to do this, you know, to change all the articles, bylaws, whatever you call them. I don't think they'd be allowed to change this without you know, having the legal right to do so, which is kind of telling in itself. Obviously, there's going to be a court case. The judges will decide. But the fact that the Cup Society is moving on, moving forwards, and attempting to raise money as well, I do think we should support them. So you can join horseshoelakelechley.com. www.horseshoelakelechley.com. And we advise people to do so. And I think that's going to help the new regime as opposed to the old regime, although I could be wrong. But I believe it is. And the more money they have in there, I know there's lots of money-making things going on at the minute. So, talking of Jules, should we just get him in?
Yeah, let's listen. Well, I really think we should do more of these Carpcast interviews actually out at the side of a lake. Just got down to the local syndicate. I'm sat here with the only carp angler with a better haircut than me.
Yeah. Better or worse?
I'll say better, I'm being polite.
Be polite, yeah.
But yeah, I'm sat with Julian Cundiff. And how many carp have you caught today?
Got down here at just before 4 a.m. As of an hour ago, I had 22.
Wow. And as soon as I pulled up, the first thing I did was
photograph the camera. Yeah. I had to be fair. I knew you were coming later, and it got to about 3:30, and I had to actually wind the rods in, other than the surface rod, which obviously you just photographed that fish with there. It was been a good session. At 8 20s in a day is pretty good, really. I suppose.
That's smashing it. And that Colin just pictured, he's actually still sat in the weed down there.
We'll give it a shove before we go, yeah.
He wants to be on the Carpcast.
Yeah, well, he will be. His picture will be anyway.
Yeah, definitely.
About 18-19, that one.
Crashing all around us.
Yeah. I came Sunday. I didn't fish this peg, I fished next door. And actually, this wasn't my original choice to swim. I'd led it about when I left on Sunday. Another swim on the right-hand side, we call the hump. And that looked absolutely spot on for me fishing. But when I got... I always have a walk around. Even when I've... Anybody who says that they don't make the mind up about fishing in advance, generally that's a bit of a lie. We all have a starting point. I knew that my starting point was probably going to be the hump on the conditions, but when I walked around here, three fish just crashed out in the dark. So I set up here, I was fishing just after 4 a.m. and then it's been literally 2 an hour, most hours, until I wound in. I mean, that is unusual. You know, I have known of people getting into double figures over 24 hours, but in 12 hours, it's a good catch.
What do you put it down to? Is it just a change in weather, or daylight hours reducing?
Culmination of things, really. It's a culmination of things. There's no one thing. First of all, there are swims that you will catch fish from. This is one of those lakes where most swims you're in with a chance of a bite. But I can think of maybe 5 or 6 swims on this lake where you're going to get a multiple hit if the conditions are right. And that's why, I picked the swim. If I was doing an overnight, I wouldn't go in the swim. Far too weedy, too enclosed for an overnighter. An evening session, day session, great, but overnighter, I wouldn't come in here. It's a multiple hit swim if you get on the fish and the fish are here. But I would say it's that conditions were perfect. It got a bit bright at dinner time. It's a little bit bright now, but everything was right. It was one of those red letter days, to be honest. Probably my most memorable day for... Yeah, I'm going to call it the decade. That was memorable because of the fish. Yeah. But as of a day's fishing, I don't recall having a better day's fishing, to be honest.
Yeah, and just looking at this swim, it looks like there's several different angles they can come at you from.
I think that's the one thing anglers make a mistake, that they don't think about where the fish are coming from, going from. They just think that the fish are there or are going to materialise. I've watched this swim, or I've fished this swim a couple of times, but it's probably a culmination of 2 or 3 months of watching it that's actually given me an idea about where to put the baits. And they're not in the same spots that everybody puts them. They come at different angles, and I'm fishing 3 spots because it's too tight with the weed. you're going to pick your other rods up. It's all right fishing your rods tight when it's clear water, but if you're fishing two or three rods on a small spot in the weed, I don't care who you are, inevitably you are going to pick up the other rods when they run. Because, yeah. I mean, when they run, they absolutely go ballistic. I mean, we've got somewhere between 3 and 4 foot of water out there, and when you hook them, they absolutely go bonkers, and they kite left or right, and they're going to pick your other rods up, so hence the rod tips are quite high, so I can see where they are.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I just had a session this week, and
crashing out still.
You're not kidding. Oh, is that fella behind actually got one on?
Yeah, I think he has. Yeah, that fella behind's got one on. Yeah.
Wow, there's fish coming out all over really soon. And my rods are at home in the cage.
Yeah.
Not that I've got a ticket, but I had a session this week. You know, ended up, it was quite busy there. I ended up, looked at the weather forecast, and like I say, I've drove down. I've got an idea where I want to be,
yeah.
You know, based on previous knowledge and the weather.
Yeah, that's your starting point.
There's someone in that swim.
Yeah.
You know, that was ruined. Ended up in a corner, but they have been getting in that corner, and thought, sorry, there's no fish there now, which is great. I'll get my trap set. You know, did it, and they were only down there for maybe a couple hours at most, but I got two, so I was happy with that.
It's a good result.
Yeah. So let's talk about bait, because I know you say you've got through quite a bit today, and have you been pouring it in?
I've been putting the key in now for. I've used the key for the start of the year. The thing nowadays with bait is, and this I find this quite amazing actually, is when I was in the 80s, people were really concerned about bait. Bait was the thing. Tackle was, you know, it was nice to have good tackle. Nowadays, people don't seem concerned about bait at all. It's the first concern seems to be, what can I get for free? What can I be sponsored on? Or what's clicky or trendy? Bait, you know, I'm not talking about the well-known carp anglers or maybe the 5 or 10% of people who really are clued in. For the majority of carp anglers nowadays, bait doesn't seem to matter at all. It's just the more interest in your rod pod or your looking carpy with your waders, that's fine. But it amazes me when I talk to people nowadays, very few people talk to me about bait. They talk to me about sponsorship, rigs, everything, but not about bait and bait choice.
A Crocs carpy.
They are, yeah, with you on the carpy, mate. They are very carpy. But yeah, I've been putting the key in, and the edge that I've found for me is that I've been coating them. I've been obviously frozen versions, which is what I prefer, coating them in oil the night before, and then putting a good old handful of stick mix in, swirl it around in my hands, and then the next day you've got literally these coated boilies that carp just seem to hoover in on. The thing with the key is most baits will catch carp, but for some reason that key, they seem to really search. When they get on it, they will continue to keep looking for it and not go away, from my observations. Don't make it a better bait than any other bait, but there's something about it that's definitely an edge.
Yeah, there is, you know, literally a handful. I can think of several baits that I've put up there on the same, the one I'm on at the minute. I'm on it, Vicar, for that very reason. You know, it's one of, you know, John Baker and John Llewellyn's recipes, which is why I've gone there. And I do... like you say, I totally agree with you there. People should think a lot more about the bait and quiz the people who are making them.
Yeah.
Is it Fred in the shed who's got a recipe offline and wants to make a few quid? Is it someone who's got genuine knowledge and genuine passion for it?
Most people, they're not bothered. They're not bothered. They are bothered about price, about clickiness, about potential of getting a free tub of pop-ups, which amazes me because when I grew up, that was the last thing. It was, you know, Jeff Kemp, Rod Hutchinson. And you didn't pick it particularly because it was cliquey. You picked it because, he knows what he's doing. And that nowadays, that's not part of me. You know, that's the way the world is. And, you know, long may it continue like that.
Oh, I remember a year back, saving up for a bucket of Ainu Val.
Yep.
Remember that? How much was that back then for a 10k bucket of base mix?
Oh, God, 10k. Really, I don't think I could even afford that. But I do remember going to Trevor Moss's original tackle shop in Gainsborough and buying 3 lots of Hutchie's protein mix, some Jeff Kemp Amarillo, and thinking, well, that'll do me the rest of this year. And it was. Whereas nowadays, you know, I've brought 5 kilos today, and I really... it's a red letter day. It's a red. Yeah. It's unusual. I could have used 7 today. You know, I put a kilo of each rod to start with, and I've kept topping it up in the day. And to be honest, the more that's gone in, the more they've fed. But, you know, it's a red letter day.
Yeah, so... coming from a fellow tight Yorkshireman to another. You've used 5 key of an expensive bait, well done.
I'm proud of you. Yeah. I mean, yeah, I'm sponsored, and people say, well, it's all right for him, he gets it for free. But let me tell you, in 1984, when I started carp fishing, through to probably the early to mid-90s, I paid for my bait. Eventually, I got it a bit cheaper, but I didn't get free bait for a long, long time.
Free bait is earned, you still have to work for it. Free is a bit of a misnomer, I think. You've got to do
it. Nobody gives you it for nothing.
Exactly. You have to earn it in other ways. But now I remember, just up, you know the place, Thought Marsh Power Station Pond, where myself and a friend Darren used to fish years back. And in fact, it was about that place you published my first ever article.
Yeah.
Light Leads. Yeah. I've still got that
in Cartfisher.
That's the one, yeah.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
But, we both saved up. We both made the mistake of going for a sack-eater cheap base mix.
Yeah.
There was bits of rubber and all sorts of shite in it. But, trip out to Ace, we bought lots of stuff, bulked it out. We couldn't afford to get any more, but we were rolling it. We were, remember that season, I believe we were using, it was Nutribase additives, some salmon oil, betaine, cranberry Nutrifruit.
Yeah, very good.
I think there was one other thing. Remember, there had been 4 ingredients. Anyway, put that in at the recommended levels we'd seen in an article. And we used to be at his house on a Monday evening in his shed. We'd roll a 20-head mix and split it into four. We'd have 2 bags apiece.
Yeah.
One of us would bait up on a Tuesday night with a bag. One of us would bait up on a Thursday night with a bag. Friday and Saturday night were overnighters. We had a bag each to fish with for 2 nights. And that's what we could afford. That is what we caught so many fish.
It makes a difference. Baiting up makes a difference. It's not essential to catching carp, but it's another edge, like a sharpened hook or whatever else you want to do. Yeah. It's not essential, but it definitely gives you an edge.
Yeah, I see carp like any wild creature. They can be trained with food.
Oh yeah, yeah. Especially if it's what they like. There are, I've used baits that are really good on one water, but don't work on another. And good baits, and occasionally you do find that, but. If you find a bait that really works, the more they get, the easier they are to catch. A bit like floater fishing, they get past the point of no return, which they clearly were today.
Yeah, I mean, getting back to people going for the quality bait, that's what a lot of my baits are tested for, a year or so.
Yeah.
A bait that'll spank one water, that is, like a sand pit like where we are now, might not work on a clay pit.
Exactly.
They've got to get that happy medium, a bait that is going to work on so many different sorts of waters, which is where field testing comes in. Fred in the shed isn't going to do that testing.
No. He's interested in making enough money to cover his cover his costs and things like that.
Yeah. And pay for his own fishing. So
pay for his own fishing. Yeah, fair play. It's each their own, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. So let's go on to the next step. Talk about rigs. I know you praise the multi-rig quite a lot. Is that what you've been using today?
It's probably, if you take away floater fishing, zig fishing, I would say since 2008, 95% of my fish will come on that. Just a bit of a lift on that right rod. 95%, I just use a multi-rig. It's obviously a variation now. It's probably changed all its components since I first started using it. But I've got a multi-rig out there, 2 ounce drop-off lead, size 5 twister sharpened, and they're hooked time and time again.
Yeah.
I don't mess around with rigs. It's my starting point. The only time that I would change from it is if it was a bit clearer and the fish were really clouding up the water and not picking up the bait, then I would use a bottom bait or a cultured hook bait, something like that. But generally, my starting point on here, especially in this weed, even the clear patches have got weed on them, I'd use a pop-up rig, always.
Yeah, and there's one thing that interests me, because I've got my own opinions on it. A straight-pointed hook like the twister is, or a big point?
Straight-pointed hook all the time.
I've got someone agrees with me.
I've never liked beaked hooks since I first saw the Leon Door 1534. Absolutely horrible. I was a Mustard O'Shaughnessy 1302-1 or something like that. I've never been a fan of beak points. I've always liked straight points. But there again, I don't fish gravel pits. So whether that makes a difference or not, I don't know. But I'm not a fan of beak points.
Yeah, I mean, anywhere I fish, when it comes to me, it's when Twisted had not been out too long. I've got some and to be honest, I put them in the back of my box and forgot about them.
Yeah.
And I'd had a second, it was session, it was on an icon, blank two nights, you know, different swings moved, found them for the last morning and just cast in little bags at them, caught four. The first one, it's, you know, this is how I'd gone onto the twisters for...
Can you come and take us a picture?
No reason. Well, looks like we've got some picture on us to do. I'm just going to pause this and we will be back in a mo. And we're back. It's another lovely little common, like a lot of the fish here in our... Yeah. How's it? 8 kilo, he said.
Yeah, he's got some old Salter scales, which only weigh in kilos.
That's old school.
So 8 kilos,
that's
we're talking...
16 and a half pounds.
A bit more, probably 17 and a half, isn't it? 2.2 pounds.
2 pounds, yeah.
Yeah, so it's about 17 and a half. That was a good 17 pound of that. That is, I would say, probably typical of the fishing here. A lot of fish between 15 and 18, 19, which... Great fish.
Yeah, great fish and great fin.
Yeah.
Great fun, sorry.
Yeah.
A lot of commons.
Yeah.
I sat back down with me back to the water. I'm sorry, I can't do that. I'm just having a shuffle.
Yeah, the twister. I think they've called it an ugly hook. I've never thought it has been an ugly hook. It's never looked ugly hooked. An ugly hook would be the cranked hook rig. That was an ugly hook. Or the crank hook. I mean, it's not a pretty hook to me. But twisters, yeah. I've gone from Fang X to Fang Twister, and I love the twister.
Yeah, and that's what I was saying that to that session on Icon. First fish I caught, you know, it's nailed an inch back.
Yeah.
The next three, you know, they weren't feeding well. Each one of them was hooked lightly,
pricked themselves.
But
yeah.
When you come to an hook'em, that hook was never coming out. Yeah, that set me thinking. I did a few experiments at home with a bit of orange peel and, you know, several hooks. I'll, you know, some straight pointed ones, not just a twister, a few others. You know, I think the stiff rigger was one.
Yeah, good hook. Yeah, lovely hook.
ESP Longshanks are a favourite of mine. And what I found is you could get a big point or a straight point.
Yeah.
If they both prick just on the edge, with a straight point, the hook is going to kind of turn upwards slightly, and the point
drives
is going to go down in a straight line. It's going to go down.
Yeah,
your big point is going to go down, and because of the angle, the trajectory, it's coming back out already.
That
gives you the hook pull, I believe.
I just don't like them.
So, I'm a bit. Any hook with a long straight point gets me attention, and
dropping the leads all the time as well. You know, I mean, that's controversial, isn't it, to some people? I'm amazed that it is controversial. I've seen so many people not drop the lead and end up with fish snagged up in balls of weed, losing 30, 40 yards of line. I only lose the lead in heavy weed. I certainly wouldn't want to drop the lead on the take. I drop the lead when it goes into heavy weed. And that weed out there is heavy enough that if you don't drop you will build up the weed on your line. I've always dropped the leads. Always drop them.
Yeah, yeah. Similar to me. I've got to ask, you've got the leaders on at the minute.
Yeah.
I've had problems in the past, especially on weedy waters. If you get a bowl of weed, collects at the top of the leader on the leader knot.
Yeah, it can do. The thing with the diffusions as well, what I do like is the new Nashi soft tail rubbers. They will keep rolling back as well. Hard tail rubbers are the problem with dropping off leads. The softer ones are great because they just roll back and they will go all the way up the line. Luckily, I've not had any, because it's got a loop, it tends to just keep going, and I've not had any problem with that, but I do know what you mean about it building up on the end of the leader, but luckily I've not had that today.
Yeah, as a result, I'm only fishing leaders around 18 inch.
But yeah, same as me.
Your lead-free leaders, that
thing.
It's more. Not for the, sink to the bottom, more of the abrasion resistance quality. Oh, Jules is away. He's forgot to turn his buzzer on. It was banging and his buzzers lighting up, and we had no volume. We couldn't get some noise on that one, but there's a fish, it's rolling out in the weed. Do you think it's dropped the lead yet?
Just a bit.
All right, I'll see how long we can keep this going while Jules plays a fish.
And I can tell you that I've only got three uplinks left.
Yeah, and just as Jules says that, the weed is... rolled straight down the line. It's nearly at that magic point where it covers the fish's eyes.
Yeah, that's what we want. I think what you're doing at times as well, but the thing with weed is you're conning them in. You're not actually pulling the head off, you're conning them in. That's not a million miles off. Oops.
Yeah.
and
and it's in the net.
It's on there,
and it's in the net. It must be true.
Yeah, in the net, it must be true.
Oh, it's a little baby mirror. Oh, it's
a baby mirror. Oh, nice one.
Yeah, a baby mirror. I won't be just on, and I'm not re-putting this rod out because when all three rods are gone, we're packing up. There we go.
Another fish.
Let's have a look. Shall I give him a rig inspection?
That's really unusual to get a small mirror. Look at that, bottom lip. Yeah. Bottom lip.
That fish was not coming off.
That was not coming off, yeah. There we go. Yeah. Lead's gone.
Yeah, basically everything we've been talking about.
There's a proof in the pudding.
Yeah, yeah. That's it, yeah. That's done.
Yeah, that is only the second carp caught live on the podcast. And the other one was Adam Penning. I've tried several times and failed so far.
Well, I'm not going to photograph him, he's only small. In fact, he is the smallest one I've caught today.
Yep, he's a lively fella, looks like he wants to get back.
He's going back, don't worry.
Yeah. Well, I say you've conned him in.
I conned him in. There you go. Number 23.
Yeah.
That rod is not going out again. And it's funny that out of the three rods, that was the one I least expected to go.
So we're going to have a countdown for the next two to go.
They will go.
I'm sorry, I'm going back to the water. I'm not doing that. I can't do it.
Yeah, again, that was a hook to the bottom lip. The thing with sharpened hooks as well. What I have found with sharpened hooks as well is, I love my twisters, and I don't think you need to sharpen them to catch fish. You know, I'm not telling that. But what I found is that I am pricking a lot more fish and I'm dropping a lot less.
Yeah, I've been... recently I've got some new sharpening kit.
Yeah.
It was a lot easier to use and stuff I've had in the past, and I can actually, you know, do it properly. Basically, yeah. Get the satisfying points when I look at them under the microscope, the eyepiece thing. It's nice and needle sharp.
The trouble is with sharpened hooks, they are one bite hooks. I mean, for me, I have... I maybe have used a sharpened hook twice at the most ever. They're one bite hooks for me. The points do turn over quite easy. Well, you're fining them right down, aren't you? So they are going to turn over.
Yeah, that's the payoff.
That's a payoff. But, you know, it's a hook, isn't it? It's you are pricking more fish, in my opinion.
Yeah, if someone said to you, you're going to catch one fish for one hook, but
do it every
one
time.
Of those fish.
Yeah.
Is going to be, and you're going to get more in.
Yeah, you are.
I don't think on, well, pressured waters, you know, cagey fish, small waters like the one that's been punishing me through the summer.
Yeah. It's a percentage game, isn't it? The crusher.
Oh,
it's a percentage game,
definitely.
Isn't it? I think nowadays, and I've talked about this before, is with so much written and so much available and so many waters, everybody can hit 70%. Everybody can hit 70%. But the carp get used to the 70%ers.
Hello?
Is that a fish or was that a... I have a feeling. I don't know if that was a fish. That was certainly a... That was right over the baited area.
It was a bit of a rattle.
It was a bit of a rattle and it was a bit of a swirl. There's so many people fishing at 70%, and they will catch fish. There's no doubt about that. It's a very effective 70%. It's the last percentages, the sharpening the hooks, the recasting, the balancing, the overshotting, the getting the hook baits right, the 101 other things that creep that percentage up to 82, 83, 84, which most people aren't bothered about, to be quite frank. So I'm happy with that. But yeah, it's just another percentage.
Yeah, totally agree with you. And, you know, are you like me? You're always looking, when you've been at this game a long time. You know,
yeah, 30 years now.
Yeah, wow. Are you, obviously you're still as keen, but are you still looking for that extra percentage, like, you know, whether you were 20, 25 years back? Are you still looking for the next ridge?
To be honest, I'm happy with what I've got, and I tend to look at... I look at what I've got, and I'm happy with what I'm doing. And one of these, they're definitely over that left hand, that middle. Oh, it's me middle rod, isn't it? Oh, my left hand rod. Yeah. Now I suppose I'm happy with what I'm doing, but I can't do things not as efficiently. If I, either it's right or it's wrong, I can't chuck a rod out and say that's close enough. I can't chuck a hook out and go that's sharp enough. It's either right or it's wrong to me. So,
yeah,
It's difficult, you know, that there are less and less edges. My edge is my determination, my motivation, my things like that. That's my edge. My edge is, I'm not a young man anymore, but I'm as passionate about as I ever was on the limited time that I have, and I have limited time.
So I'm just pause. I'm just totally distracted. I say we should do these interviews at side of the lakes. I can't take my eyes off it.
I know, it's gorgeous.
That's an edge.
That is it, yeah. I mean, to be fair, yeah, that's an edge. It's watching the water is definitely an edge. There's sometimes, and it's really weird this, and I would hope that nobody takes this the wrong way, I don't find carp fishing at the least bit relaxing at all. The problem is that you're always looking, wondering, thinking, recasting, rechecking. I don't go carp fishing to relax. I go carp fishing to achieve, to drive myself on. If I want to relax, I'll get on my push bike and I'll ride 40, 50, 60, 70
That's
miles.
That's relaxing?
That's relaxing to me because my head, it can be in a different world. When I'm carp fishing, I can't be thinking about anything other than carp fishing. If I'm thinking about other things than carp fishing, I'm not doing it well. Whereas on a bike, you are just simply turning your legs and I can be thinking about anything else. When I'm carp fishing, I can't relax. I can't sit and read a magazine. I can't nod off. I try, but I can't.
Yeah, all I do nowadays, I haven't took a magazine fishing for, honestly, can't remember, you know, probably the best part of 10 years.
Yeah.
And I'll download half a dozen podcasts.
Yeah.
But I just have them playing in the background. They're not disturbing me what I'm doing. I don't need any hands. Don't need my eyes. But
they are useful. Yeah, I mean, I tend to pack up to Planet Rock and set up to Planet Rock. I tend not to listen to them, but I fish short sessions, maybe 12, 14 hours. But I do like, especially when there's nobody else here, I will put my AC/DC or Airborne, Thin Lizzy, etc. on fairly loud when I'm packing up if there's nobody else here. That is...
Has anybody walked around and found you in mid-air guitar bands?
<you're>, you know? Sure they have, probably thought, it's that idiot.
Yeah. But I mean, my usual session, I'll finish work at 2 on a Sunday, get home, sort my stuff out, I'm off a couple of nights and I'm back home midday Tuesday.
Yeah.
And I'll get home and I'll be shattered.
Yeah.
And get a bollocking from the wife because she just wants to go out and all I want to do is have
it's impossible to fish those kind of sessions and be relaxed because it's not like that. You're having to work all the time.
Yeah. You know, when... I've been fortunate over the years to fish alongside some, you know, the best anglers this country has produced on some of the hardest waters, and I think they've all got one thing in common, is they are...
Hyperactive,
impatient.
Yeah.
I've seen people moved at midnight.
Yeah.
You know, I did it once when I was half cut. That was fun pushing the barrel.
Yeah,
I couldn't sit still knowing the fish were there.
Being driven is, you know... Everybody can copy everybody else. You can, you know, if you've got the money, you can go on the best waters. If you've got the money, you can buy a tutorial. What you can't buy is motivation. And either it matters to you or it doesn't. And you can't buy that. You either want to do it or you don't want to do it. There's no middle ground. Yeah. And whatever you're driven to do something, there's always a chance of achieving. If you are not driven to do it, it'll never happen. I mean, I fish with people who are a lot better anglers than me, but they're not motivated enough to recast properly, and you know that it's.
Yeah. Do you know there's one thing that's, well, you know, yourself, you have to, you know, read dozens and dozens of articles.
Yeah.
Every now and then you read something that just clicks in your brain, and one's just popped into my head, and it was a Tom Pickering article, feeder fishing for bream on Semmer water, up in the Dale, and it was. Just a comment, he says, you know, if it takes 10 casts to get it right on the spot, it will take 10 casts, he will do it. That's why he was world champion.
Yeah, it's still a good angler now. And his daughter, of course, his daughter's right up there for angling as well.
Yeah. I'll send it this a lot of times a week and learn so much off watching some of them.
Yeah. It's my idea of how a match fishing is, you know.
To be honest.
But they are very good at what they do, and, you know, I wouldn't want to criticise them, because I don't, you know, once you start criticising other anglers, you know, it's people in glass houses. You know, we could criticise how match anglers behave, and they can criticise what we do, and the problem is you end up under, you know, you underdevelop everybody, so, you know, it's not good, you know. It's just carp fishing.
Yeah. There was another quote. This is years back when I used to go up to the old Pilks matches on the canal near Kirk's Handle there. You know, yeah. Kid on mountain bike, you know, punishing kid, annoying everyone. But there's one old fella, I remember, called Wal, you know, kind of took me under his wing a bit. Well, he'd talk, just told me, you know, just keep yourself down, keep out of the way, and, you know, just chat. But I do remember one of the things he says, fishing, it's like sex. You don't have to be good to enjoy yourself. Which is just as well for the sex bit for me. You know, you shouldn't judge whatever anyone else does, because
I'm never worried.
Enjoyment.
Yeah.
You know, too many people do.
Yeah, I'm not bothered about. I like to see other people who fish and all that, but I never worry about what other people are doing, what they've caught, what anybody else might think of me or not. Ever. It's, you know, it's hard enough worrying about what I'm doing myself. Never mind worrying about somebody else. I haven't got time to worry about what other people are doing.
Yeah, it's everyone's own personal journey.
Yeah.
I think that's probably the best way of putting it. Now, and that's just one thing I was going to ask you. I did have a message, someone told me. What's in Joel's tackle box? It's down there.
What is in my tackle box? Goodness me.
Open this box of tricks.
Goodness me, what have we got in this tackle box?
Quite a large one.
Yeah, it's the.
Ooh.
Right, what we've got? We've got a couple of torches. Moths? No.
Oh, is that the wallet?
Yeah. Got a couple of torches. Four pairs of scissors, which people will think, why do you have four pairs? Well, it's two pairs of two, if you notice. Some are good for cutting braids, and some are good for cutting mono. So you'll find that if you are using one set of scissors to cut braids, if you then try and cut monos with them, it does not work. So in effect, I've got one and a spare of each.
That does make sense.
I've got a little that is the most important thing. It's my little little list of things to do for when I go home. Order leads.
you've tie too many off.
Yeah, tie more multi rigs, etc. etc. So you know, little things like that. I've got my little pot of shot. I always keep, even though they're not expensive, but whenever I finish, I always take the shot off and put it away. I do know that one of the little shots will balance out an 11mm pop-up, etc., etc. So it's just saving time. What else have I got? Oh, I've got a second alarm clock, just in case my other one doesn't work. I've got my Jag eyepiece. I don't sharpen my own hooks, but I always look at the points with the eyepiece. You cannot, if you prick your finger with a hook, it will always feel sharp, even if it's turned over. A Jag eyepiece won't let you down. Set of earplugs. They are absolutely fantastic. My mate Duff Batty is the worst snorer in the world. And whenever I go fishing with him, I wear earplugs. Sorry, Duff, but it's true.
I suppose in his business, he's going to have a supply of earplugs.
Yeah, he's got a supply of earplugs, and I think he's deaf. And I've got everything else. I've got lighters, I've got tape for marking, I've got PVA. You name it, I've got it. I've even got some spare leads from you. I've got wire cutters. Always important for fish. Sometimes you will hook a fish and you cannot get the hook out with just teasing it out. Sometimes you have to cut the point off, thread it round. So that's the thing. So, you know, a bit of everything. I don't have anything special. There's me Lucky Rabbit. We all have Lucky mascots.
Has it got a name?
No, it's just a Lucky Rabbit, and it goes with...
Oh dear, he's pulling his pants down.
It's the lucky pants as well. It can't
oh,
be.
Oh, don't look.
There you are. Lucky pants!
Lucky pants, oh dear.
we laugh about it, but fishing to me is confidence. If I'm not confident, I am hopeless. And confidence is built up with years and years of things. I know what I'm confident with. and you know, I do. I'm fanatical about things like that. I won't, when I open the gate, I'll never walk in front of the car. I salute magpies. I never wet the net before I get a fish in. Blah, 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 blah. Everybody laughs about it, but
well, we've all got those little quirks.
Little quirks, isn't it? Yeah. It's what sets your mind.
Yeah, I don't say I'm superstitious myself. The only thing I do is every knotless knot has to have a lucky seven turns.
Well, yeah, it's a I'm a five turn. I'm a five turn knotless knot man.
That's a
Carp Society, eh?
Yeah, things are moving on there. I see you can we can join now.
Yeah,
I've seen the website.
I've seen that. I have to say I haven't joined yet, purely and simply because I haven't seen what's happened with the final court battle or whatever you want to call it. And I'm loath to put money into anybody's pocket until I know it's going to the right people. And I'm rather hoping the right people are eventually going to win it. And it sounds like they are from what we've seen. But you know, it's. It seems to be going in the right direction, and the you know the conference is looking good. So it doesn't happen over. It's court battles don't happen overnight, but
no,
it's definitely getting there.
Yeah, brilliant. Yeah. So just if you were at the helm of the Carp Society, where would you like it to go? Would you like it to be as it was? Yeah, with regional meetings.
I think there should be regional meetings. I think there's a lot to be said for regional meetings. There certainly needs to be a magazine. Without a magazine,
maybe a podcast
or a podcast. Yeah, you could have a podcast. You could have a magazine. I mean, funny enough, actually, one of the magazines. I went to the Hut to get some water, and Pike Lines, the Pike Society, They have an amazing magazine, full colour, absolute. I don't know how regular it is, whether it's week, monthly, or bi-monthly, or quarterly, or yearly. What an incredible magazine. Now, if somebody's telling me the Carp Society cannot fund a magazine as a carp organisation, and yet the Pike Society can, I don't believe it.
And, well, there's infinitely more carp anglers than pike infinitely. Anglers. Look at that fish. There's one just bow waved about a rod length out.
Absolutely. He's
come to have a listen.
Have a listen. I mean, I think the Carp Society still does have a place. Well, until you try it, you can't know what it's place. It's different. The world's a different place now. But carp fishing is ginormous now. And if it's well advertised, well promoted, it gives something that other things doesn't. It gets the motif right. It gets the right people in the thing. It's promoted correctly. It can work.
Yeah, I totally agree with you, and well, I kind of sit back with a popcorn and await developments. But you know, just reading between the lines on you know some of the Facebook posts that, like, you know, Marsh Prattley has made, he's not giving much away, but he does. You know, there's an air of confidence around there. So,
yeah.
Fingers crossed on that one. And will you be at the conference this year?
Yeah, I'll be at the conference. I'm usually I tend to do three conferences. I tend to do the Carp Society one at Sandown. That's the first of the year, which is a kick-off one, isn't it? And that's always a good one for the launching of new books. The new Mike Wilmot book will be out. That'll be good.
It will, yeah. We've just had him on the last week's podcast.
Fantastic. Great. That'll be a great book. There's always new books out then. And then, of course, there's the Five Lakes. And then, of course, there's the Northern... The Big Northern Show as well in April. So, you know, it's a conference season will soon be on us again.
Oh, you're not kidding. Man, we've got an autumn hauling. Hopefully hauling. Well, you've been doing it today. This is... what's the date today? 6th of September?
6th of September, yeah.
You've had an autumn's worth of fish already.
I've caught enough carp today. To be honest, I've never wanted to kick the you-know-what out of anything, be it bike riding, motorbikes, or anything, because I think you can lose a love. And I think 23 carp in a day, to be honest, is quite enough for me.
Well, there's two rods left out. That'll be 25, that's the target. Exactly. A nice round number.
But yeah, that's enough. I mean, you know, the trouble is, you think that's enough. 2 days from now, I'll be thinking, do you know what, I should have had 27. You know, it's one of those things, isn't it? You know, and you think you've satisfied yourself, and yet 3 or 4 days later, you're dying to get back on the lake again. A bit like riding a bike. I do 60 or 70 miles, and I think, why on earth did I do that? 3 or 4 days later, I think, no, I could do that again.
Yeah, let's say I've got, not bike riding, though, he's kind of on the list with me and the wife, but I've got myself a couple of nice heavy kettlebells that I'm enjoying swinging around at the minute.
Yes.
I don't like doing any exercise with impact, because my joints aren't the best as they used to be, but just swinging them around, I'm really going into it, and I've finished one session, I've got a good sweat on. I did it the other way, stood on the decking in my back garden in the rain. I've gone inside, I want to do that again.
Yep, that's the endomorphins, isn't it, that it releases?
Yeah.
And that's the trick, isn't it? It's to find what makes you happy in life, you know, and it could be carp fishing, it might be carp fishing to the exclusion of everything else, but I do think you have to try other things and say, do you know what, I love carp fishing, not obsessional to the exclusion of everything else, but because I don't get to do it as much as I want, I try as hard as I can. You know, if you had infinite time to do it, you'd say, well, what the hell, you know, I could go in better conditions. I ain't got a choice. You know, if I've got Wednesday off, I'm going Wednesday. It doesn't matter that the conditions, they might be spawning or whatever, I've got to go on the Wednesday. It's either you go or you don't go.
Yeah, and a lot of people, they go on about weather and moon phases especially. I couldn't give a monkey's what the moon phase is doing. I'm fishing on my days off.
I'm with you on that. I mean,
jig for me.
You know, I don't know about the moon phaser thing. Again, I don't look too much into it. There are conditions. Today was ideal conditions for fishing, and I was lucky that it was my day off, so that was brilliant. I'm sure if you had infinitely more time, you could pick your time better. You know, that there are certain times that you would go, certain times you wouldn't go. But there's something perversely enjoyable about having to go sometimes when it's not ideal conditions. Because I think you can actually talk yourself out of fishing. If you could go whenever you wanted, you would say, well, I'm only going to go when it's like this. Then all of a sudden you'd say, well, I'm going to go today, but there's too many people fishing, so I'm not going to go. And then, well, it's less than, you could actually end up never going fishing. And it's not, who's going to say which is perfect? You might think the conditions are perfect, and they're not. The only thing that says that the conditions are perfect to the carp. So that it's, you know, it's not a game of mathematics. The carp fishing is so flexible, and there are conditions that scream carp, and I've sat and thought, why haven't I caught anything? And there are other times I've gone and thought, I'm going through the motion here, and it's beep, 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 beep. And I think, how did that happen? And that's the great thing about carp fishing, isn't it, compared to anything else?
Yeah, definitely. I've just had a look on my phone, on the app I've got, and checked the moon phase for today, because you've had it off. And we're 2 days before the first quarter. Which...
is that good?
On it. I don't know, I don't really look at it. Seeing as we're talking about it, but...
I used to look at the old Abu catalogue, and it used to have, not the moon phases, but it used to say best for fishing and worst for fishing. Yeah. And I think that was probably based around the moon phases. They were great, those Abu catalogues. I used to love those.
Yeah. Here's another thing I've just noticed that comes up in conversation every now and then. You've got very tight lines on there.
Yeah.
And slack line seems to be in vogue.
The reason if there was no weed, I would be fishing a lot slacker. I would prefer my line to be along the bottom. But bearing in mind, I'm fishing probably somewhere about 30, 40 yards out. There's a lot of weed. The last thing I want to do is see is a swirl over the over where I'm fishing, pick my rod up and find the fish is in a weed bed in the reeds. The fish are not that spooky. Well, they are quite line spooky when you floater fishing for them. But they're clearly strongly on the bait, and I'm fishing probably the near side of each baited patch, so I don't think they're coming across the bait. I mean, we're getting very few liners, and there are a lot of fish about. So I tend to fish slackish lines, but in somewhere like this, you've got a slack line. It's in the weed. You've lost it.
It is a recipe for disaster.
Absolute recipe for disaster.
Yeah, and well. That common you caught when I arrived is still soaking down there.
Yeah, well, let's give him a push, because then...
He's been there a while.
He's been there a while.
Go on, off you go.
Off he goes. Come on, come on.
Oh, there he goes. Oh, does
he? Off he goes. Yeah.
Is he off back for some
himself.
More of your bait?
Yeah. In fact, he's still... Has he gone there? I'll make sure he's gone before him.
Yeah, he's upright anyway, he's just resting. I bet this is a lovely place in the dark. I bet it is pitch black. There's no light.
Absolutely pitch black, totally pitch black, which is good. But the problem is, you know, this swim you would not fish. If you fish this swim in the dark, it's a recipe for disaster. You are not going to land them in the dark. no matter how experienced you are as an angler, you don't get the set, you can't look at your line, whatever. Funny enough, this swimmer fished with Tom Morrison from Crafty, and I think it was about a week ago, I think it was a Sunday, it was a week ago, and we had a stack of fish, absolute stack of fish. I wound in at midnight, purely and simply because it's not found the fish, you know. It was getting to the stage where if they were running, I couldn't exactly tell where the majority of the weed was. So I wound them into the morning anyway, so that was, it's not something I normally do, but I had to on that occasion.
Yeah, I suppose even a machine like you needs to sleep as well.
Yeah, I need about, generally, I can get by on 3 or 4 hours of sleep most nights, and then I'll have one good lay in a week. I mean, tomorrow I'm working at the Scarborough Magistrates Court. So I'm up at 5 o'clock tomorrow morning, and I'll be on the train for just after 7, and I'll be home 7 to 8 o'clock at night. So it's a full day, you know. It's it's hard work at my age.
Yeah, it's hard work at my age.
Yeah,
you know, I'm one of those people. I need. I can do maybe one day, maybe two on, you know, 4 or 5 hours kip.
Yeah,
but the night after I'm going 10.
Yeah, no. Do you know? I don't think I've ever had 10 hours. A full sleep for me would be going to bed about 11 o'clock and getting up at 7. So 8 hours would be me having a leisurely day.
Yeah. Man, I'll tell you what though, I am sleeping a damn sight better since I packed caffeine in a good few months back now. I'll have one full fat coffee in the morning, it's decaf after that, and it?
Yeah, yeah.
Notice a difference straight away.
Yeah, I'm decaf, and you know, I'm stuff like that, you know. And again, if you're very busy like I am, you know, we laugh about it, but water, fruit, not eating crap on the bank makes a massive difference. Honestly, I've got in the car. There goes the fish. It's off now.
He's waving at us.
He's waving at us. He's off. In the car, I have a litre of water, and I will drink that litre of water on my way home, because by the time I get in the car tonight, I will be tired. By the time I get home in half an hour's time, that litre of water will make me feel a lot better.
Yeah,
well, you know, it makes a difference.
I've come down here with a litre of water myself.
Yeah, it makes a difference.
Yeah. The only bad thing, I was coming back from the lake Tuesday, you know, and I was, you know, drinking plenty of water as I always do. Then I got in a traffic jam near Blythe Roundabout to get off. Oh my God, I was driving cross-legged.
You need to have the old bottle,
the Oasis bottle with a big top.
Yeah,
it's got to be a big top.
Big top,
or a jug.
Yeah, no, a little top. Yeah. You don't want to be stopping on the motorway.
No, I know if I was to do that though, I'd have to start moving again, and there'd be a lorry driver right next to me,
giving you a wave.
Yeah, yeah. Or
I recognise you? You're from the Carpcast.
Yeah, I'd say, yeah, my name's Jamie.
Slightly more hair than Jamie.
Yeah, oh, I don't, it's going, it's receding.
It's not bad, it's a good hair.
No, it's, man, we're doing this, you know, thing with GRC now. They put a picture up the other day of us. I had to tell them, I said, I can't share that one. You can see me bald spot on it.
Oh, dear.
You know, I've got a big comb over.
No.
Most of it before he's gone.
Funny enough, my friend Graham Drury will kill me for this. He Graham's got a Hilton photographic, brilliant shop. Oh. And he edits his pictures, and he does, in fact, edit the bald spot out.
Send him mine.
Yeah. He will do that, yeah. Go to Graham, if you have a bald spot, go to Graham Drury. He's got years of practicing of editing out that dome area. Sorry, Graham. I did promote the shop, though.
Oh, he's going to kill you.
He will kill me, yeah.
I think his baldness is good enough for, like, say, Kerry King and...
Yeah.
You know, ooh, Rob Halford.
You've got two different ends of the spectrum there.
Oh, yeah, but legends.
Yeah, but you also have hair. Joey Tempest, John Bon Jovi. Yeah, I'm going for the hair side of things.
Yeah, look at Tom Araya.
Nah, Richie Sambora. You're never going to convince me to go bald or into death metal.
All right, bald and hair will cross over. Steel Panther.
Steel Panther, well, no, that, as we well know, that is not real hair. Funny enough, the guys, and they were very funny, and they were one of those people when we went to meet them backstage when they toured with Motley Crue and Def Leppard. And went to get the pictures, usually do, and I'll never forget, one of them said to me, with wigs or without wigs? And I thought, wow, I never expected to hear that. And I went, just as you are, guys. Great band.
Yeah.
But don't play them to your mother.
No. Or any prospective girlfriend.
Exactly.
But yeah, I've only just recently started actually listening to them, and yeah, every song you just, how the hell did they get away with that?
I don't know.
Yeah. What's the one I was listening to the other day about fat girls?
Whoa.
The chorus like, whoa, whoa, there she blows.
Yeah, yeah. It's probably not diverse, equity and diversity.
No, the political correctness is not
politically correct.
But I think political correctness is overrated in a lot of times nowadays.
Not in my job, you have to be very politically correct.
Yeah, I can imagine. But that's why I like doing the podcast. It is, it's a term, free media.
Free media.
Yeah, where you listen to a lot, like you listen to Joe Rogan's. And I'm starting to listen to Scroobius Pip. He's like a spoken word. He's an English
chap.
He does a podcast, and he's a wrestling and UFC fan as well.
Yeah, of course.
But yeah, I listened to one. He had Simon Pegg on, and you know, Shaun of the Dead.
Oh, Shaun of the Dead. Yeah.
And that sort of thing. Was it Space? I think was it as well.
Yeah.
That was brilliant. We're getting totally off fishing.
Yeah, let's get back into fishing.
I'm waiting for one of these two remaining.
I really ought to recast that left-hand rod because I had a bleak. And I can't sit. I've sat for 10 minutes. I should have recast that.
Do you think you might have been done?
It certainly was a bleak and there was a swirl over the area and I don't generally like that.
Yeah, there's a good chance the fish pricked itself or just caught the rig.
I don't like to leave it like that.
Yeah.
So luckily the line is marked, so into the line clip.
Is that a bit of tape you have on it there?
It was clear. It was fine, but yeah, it's just a bit of tape on my line. You can see as soon as I pull back in, there's so much weed. The wrong side of that clear patch. I mean, to be honest, it was clear. It doesn't mean you've not been done just because it's clear.
Yeah.
But that's usually quite a prolific spot.
Yeah, and it is coming to a time of evening where I would I'd expect the fish to be they do seem to have slowed down showing, haven't they?
Yeah, they have. Yeah. I mean, to be fair, they have been fairly well hammered in this one spot. So I'm not really surprised about that. I mean, it's one of those things, isn't it? It's what I call developing the carping conscience. I cannot sit and think, I'm sure that's all right, or I can't be bothered. Obviously, I'd have not been doing this interview within about a minute of that fish spooking over that rod. I'd have recast that straight away.
The multi rig is going back out, as we've described. Like the only thing I haven't mentioned before, you've got two pieces of rig foam on there as well.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
There he goes.
Straight on the mark. The reason I use two pieces of foam is, in fact, again, I'll just tell you, that was about a foot short, and as I said before, I cannot sit and think, that was fairly close, or that was close enough. It was probably about a foot short. Why do I use two bits of foam? Most people who use foam use it incorrectly, as I showed when we did the Carpcast social, didn't we? They squeeze the foam over the hook and it ends up like a horrible bit of bread flake. I use colour foam so that I know both bits have come off. If you use two bits of white, two bits of green or whatever, anything over 30 yards, you don't know whether one piece has come off or two pieces have come off. So by using two different colours, you can actually tell that both pieces have come off, and that's still absolutely pin sharp. I put one piece on, lick each end of the foam and squeeze each end. Now what that does, it creates in the middle a hole, so when it hits the bottom, two bits of foam suspend it off the bottom, the water is forcing itself up the hole and it forces the foam off, whereas most people put foam on absolutely incorrectly and it just becomes like a piece of sodden bread flake. Total waste of time. But it's something that I've found. Oh, there's a fish right on that. In fact, it's probably having to go at that foam.
There it goes.
Again, I can't leave that one. And do you know why? Because I've cast it. And the problem is, we've had so many fish today
as you can see, there's so much floating weed, and that dropped actually too close to floating weed. So you can have it, that pick that, you know, you can have it, you think it's perfect, but if that has dropped down and picked up some floating weed on the way down, all that happens is you've got ouch, that hurt.
Hook's still sharp then?
The hook is still very, very sharp, and that actually has cost me a piece of shot, which I have to say, I actually bought.
Oh wow.
Against tax, of course.
Does that go down on your little white notepad, more sharp?
That's how sharp they are.
Oh.
Yeah, a nice little bit of blood there. I mean, that is, you know, that's pricked me. Just, you know, it's not made a... And the one good thing about sharpened hooks as well is that once or twice I've put them in my finger and they don't have come out quick as well. If you take them out straight away. But they do hurt.
Yeah, by the time they've hurt, they're already 3 or 4 mil in. You don't feel that first.
I think the problem is when people put a hook in the hand, they look at it and think, ouch, what am I going to do now? And they start thinking about it. Should I take it out? Should I take it out? Shouldn't I take it out? After about 20 seconds, that will swell up and you won't take it out. So you've got to man up, and you still see them on that baited spot. Do you see the swirling over the baited spot?
Yeah, I can see the disturbance. Yeah, still there, about to get a lead on his head.
Still
not happy?
No. As we talked before with Tommy Pickering, the problem is that where I normally drop it at the back of the clear spot, the floating weed...
So your clip distance is a bit...
I'm going to have to... So what I'll do is I'll stand back a little bit and just drop it a bit short. How many times have you put a hook in your hand?
Oh, too many.
How many times have you been to hospital?
Once,
yeah. And did it hurt?
It did. It wasn't very... What did hurt more is I was supposed to be taking the wife out that evening, and instead of going out from fishing, I just slipped the hook link off, tied a new one on and carried on fishing, wiggling the hook around, making it even worse.
Oh, no, I wouldn't do that.
So, no. I learned my lesson there. You know straight away when it's
I knew that. That was the fifth cast. That was the fifth cast. And that is right on the clear spot.
Yeah, so hopefully proof will be in the pudding of Joel's obsessive carp disorder in getting the cast bag on.
It's certainly on the clear spot anyway.
Yeah. You've got the same butt rests I use as well, the gripper ones.
Yeah, anybody who's fished in weed and just leaves the butt on the bottom, it's a recipe for disaster, because when the carp takes it will lift the butt of your rod up, and I don't care how big your snag ears are, that is going to come off. They're absolutely brilliant.
I had some snag ears for a while myself, and then I thought, what the hell am I doing with those?
Every time carpy.
That was my carpy 5 minutes. Wherever I can, I use single sticks and point the rod straight at the spot anyway. Yeah. Snag ears are pretty much redundant.
Yeah.
And they were plastic and crap. But they were cheap. That's the main thing.
Excellent. So that's it. That should be one of those two. I'm surprised that I'm very surprised the right hand rod's not gone off.
Yeah, it has. One of those casts, I don't know if it was just the ripples from where you were... had recast. There was no bleep, but I did see the line kind of shaking a touch.
You can see them over high. Over that baited area. Now you can see the swirls right where that hook bait is. You can see it now.
Yeah, they're bubbling a bit as well, if I'm not mistaken.
They are bubbling on that area.
Considering that is what a 2 ounce lead just been deposited there.
I think when they're, that is bubbling like mad. They are absolutely. It doesn't. I'm afraid as well. I'm live on the carp cast.
Oh. Jules needs to water the tree.
This is usually a way of getting a run, isn't it?
Oh yes, it is definitely a way of tempting fate.
I think we worry too much about stuff. If when you go floater fishing and those fish are feeding on the surface, you can play fish. You can play fish through fish. And it won't spook them. And then you just keep the bait going in, and they will continue to feed and continue to feed. There are fish feeding on that baited spot. Whether they'll pick the hook bait up, you can never say, but that did not spook those fish.
Yeah, that should remind us, this is years back, Woolpack, float fishing in the corner, Jamie's there, and managed to hook a fish. It was springtime. I'm playing this fish, I'm stood up to my knees in the water anyway. There were other fish following the one I was playing, not just the odd one, there's about four or five, and you know, and it was a long fight anyway. The size 10 big T, 10 pound line. It was a 28 pound linear I finally landed, a beautiful black fish. But there were just others following it. I'm watching with the Polaroids in the gin clear water, thinking, wow, I'm going to try and net all of these.
yeah, 214 pounds, you mean. But yeah, you know, when you get. When they're not feeding on the surface, anything will spook them. Anything will spook them. Mm. The same as on the bottom. But when they're feeding on the surface, you know, when you get them going to the risers, the pellets or whatever, literally, as soon as I net that fish, I will bait up and keep the bait going up. And they are bubbling like mad. They will feed. And I think it happens on the bottom as well. They sometimes get to the point, sometimes get to the point of they're not bothered. They just want that food. And it's competitive feeding. There ain't just one carp out there. That's the difficulties when you're just fishing for one fish, because that fish can take or leave it. If you've got four, something struck out there, didn't it? The danger, of course, with this lake is it's full. It's got a few of those things that we don't like.
Bream.
No, worse than bream.
Catfish. Oh, giant slugs.
Yeah, and this area, certainly to my left, is notorious for producing catfish. I don't want one of those. I really don't want a catfish live for the podcast. Otherwise, it'll be going on until tomorrow.
Yeah, I shall be packing up and leaving you to it in the
absolutely,
darkness.
Absolutely, yeah. I'm not. I mean, each their own. I've caught one or two. I've not caught one from here, but they're, you know, they are an incredible creature, like a big cat. I mean, they are certainly fishy over that area. They're an incredible creature, but they're not what you want when you're carp fishing. Bream, we're talking about bream. I've gone off the mush, as I call it, and I've had no problem with bream since I've just gone straight to boilies.
Yeah, just is it large boilies to avoid them, or just?
No, I've been using 10x15 boilie pellets. It just appears that when you put in the hemp, the liquidised sweet corn, the things like that, I think the bream, you know, I've caught a lot of bream from here, and yet as soon as I've gone into just the boilies, it's almost as though the carp will chase the bream away if they're any around. They're not bothered about it when it comes to. They're definitely bubbling on that, aren't they?
Yeah, I'm going to be very surprised if that doesn't go before the end of play today. But also, it's they've been having it today, and it also shows five casts, whatever it was, to get back on that spot.
Yeah,
still there.
Oh, so yeah, those fish are. I think the one problem is now is that I do think a lot of that bait has gone, and it's very unusual for me to run out of bait. But 5 kilos of bait is a lot of bait.
It is.
But when you're using 15 mils, you talk to people about bait and they say, you know, I put in loads and loads of bait. Most people don't know what 5 kilos of boilies catapulted out is. It's
that
a
kills
lot.
Your arms.
It is a lot of bait. Most people I know who fish just use, you know, maybe 50, 60, 70 at the most. 5 kilo of bait is a lot of boilies. And it keeps the carp going. But I, again, if I was doing a bit longer, I probably would have put some more bait out. But we ain't got no bait left. We got no hook lengths left. We got no leads left. We got no bait
it's
left.
A good session when everything's trashed.
Yeah, we haven't got any hot water left. We've got no milk left. I only brought one packet of biscuits. We've had to rely on more foam from you. Yeah, I don't really want too many more sessions like this. I now know why the old guys of the past fish a big carp. Who wants to be catching 20 carp a day? Every day.
Yeah, there's people out there who do this on a pole.
Yeah.
Ooh, I can't imagine that.
Fair play to people who do these carp matches at Drayton. And I mean, I don't know how many carp they catch at Drayton in a day.
Oh, it makes you tired when... I spoke to Kev Hewitt on the podcast, who's obviously...
He's
in the England team?
Yeah, he should be.
He's up there, he's that level. And it made me tired talking to him about it.
Yeah.
you know, it is, it's constant. If they're not playing fish, they're topping it up. And yeah, I've watched a couple of thinking tackles with
Harry
Chan. What's the two lads?
Billy
and Jamie.
Billy Lunders, Jamie Flowers.
That's it,
yeah.
When you watch them, they did one on Waltham stuff.
Oh, I watched them in the rain.
Yeah, in the rain. And they're just active and, you know,
But there again, I think you have to want to do it. I've never got into match fishing at all. And whether it was £5,000, £10,000, £20,000, £50,000, it doesn't motivate me enough to try as hard as I would need to do it. Yeah. Same as the pursuit of one single big fish. I'm not motivated enough to, you have to find out what motivates you. And what I'm doing at the moment motivates me to, you know, get up at 3:30 on a day off, you know, to get home covered in slime, to recast. I'm not that motivated to fish for a singular big fish or to match fish at the moment. Yeah. I might, if I have too many days like this, I might turn to big fish angling, I tell you.
Yeah, just poach that big pit over the back.
Yeah, there is,
rumours.
Yeah.
Never get into match fishing. I've got my friend Dan who fishes here. He's just
Dan Robson. Yeah, he came fourth in the year.
Did really well. Had a PB in the final.
£26 was it?
Yeah. And he keeps punishing me, trying to tell me, you know, come on, fish one of these matches with us. I'm like, I can't be bothered. I'm not going to fish in a swim that I don't necessarily want to fish anyway. Is
that at a time that you might not necessarily want to do.
With rules.
Yeah.
As well, I can't. Pick up my sound box and walk down 100 yards down the bank and check the margins. Yep. That's not allowed.
I think it's a good way of improving you as an angler. To be honest,
anything that gets you out of your comfort zone does.
That is a great way of improving you as an angler. But I think as you get older, time becomes more important. So my time is very important. And I, it's funny. You know, I sat at home a few days ago. We did a little pie chart of. If you actually look, you go to bed at. You know, you get up in the morning at 6, you go to work, and you get home at, say, 6. So that's 12 hours of my 5 days a week is spent at work or based around work. And then you go to bed at 10 and you get up at 6. So that's, you've only got 4 hours every day at the most. So that's 4 times 5, that's 20 hours in the week. And then you've got the weekends and you've got your commitments to your parents, to your family, you've got your things that you need to do. You are left with very little time. And for that reason, I only do what I want to do. You know, because there isn't enough hours in the day. That's why overnighters are great, because it's better to be sleeping at the lakeside than it is to be sleeping at home if you want to catch carp. And most people talk about how many overnighters. There ain't every year tonight.
That's true.
There wasn't anybody here last night or the night before. Yeah. Overnighters are very easy to talk about in February, March and April.
But when the nights are long.
Yeah, but most people blow out a lot earlier on than that.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. It gets back to, just doing what you want to do. And that, you just maybe think about that pie chart.
Yeah.
If I did that, mean I work 40 hours a week in my job.
Yep.
My evenings are took up with either, you know, carp cast, researching shows, you know, chasing, guests, lining things up, talking to, potential advertisers and, doing a plan.
There are not enough hours in the day to do everything you want to do. So never mind doing stuff you don't want to do. You know, and I do not understand people doing stuff. Oh, they're still over that baited area. I am surprised that left-hand rod has not gone. But sometimes you can find fish over that area and they've had too much of a pasting and they'll be fish there, but they're a lot more. I'm sure if we left them into dark, they would go.
Oh yeah. Yeah, without a doubt. But, it's not the only bites though. I've noticed the mozzies there are a bit
relentless. Horrendous. Yeah, horrendous. Yeah. It's no good going to work. You get 3 mozzie bites on your face. You end up looking like Elephant Man, and it's you maybe get away working on a building site, but when you go to work and you've got a suit on and you look like Elephant Man, it's I'm fine with mozzies. They don't. Some people swell up, don't they, horrendously. They don't really bother me that much. I get bitten. It's not the end of the world.
Yeah.
It's not like losing a pound or something, is it?
Oh, I could do with losing a few pounds. No, I don't do too bad with the bites, unless it's a horsefly.
I don't think anybody can be immune from a... If you are bitten by a horsefly, you are going to suffer.
Yeah, but that Avon stuff, that does seem to work with horseflies. We're down in the Cotswolds at one of these JRC filming gigs, and there was like a field full of sheep behind us. And they were relentless. Not like your full, you know, funny, bright coloured ones.
Oh.
It was just these little, like, you know, some weird, strange little black triangle things.
Yeah.
And until I creamed up, they were literally all over me. You're talking not just the odd one biting, you know, relentless. And then, you know, when some of the other fellas turned up, I knew what was coming for him, because it was a hot, hot day as well. And they came round to where I was fishing, and they gets out, they're walking towards me, and that's it. They're like fighting the invisible man with it.
I know, yeah, I used to suffer on Tyler in Motorway, were horrendous for mosquitoes and stuff like that. You would get your canvas bivvy, you would zip the things down, and you would probably spend about an hour just getting rid of every single mozzie. But by the time you'd done that, it was so hot in the canvas bivvies. They were great, but God, you used to cook in them.
Yeah,
I don't miss...
Vents nowadays are brilliant.
Yeah, I don't miss being punished by those kind of things anymore.
There's one.
Right at the edge,
that is about 3 foot from the bank under Jules Robs.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is very, very active. It's wonder you've smashed it up today. But,
yeah, I think, to be honest, they've had a pasting. And funny enough, there's actually people due here tomorrow. I think Daiwa are coming down here tomorrow. I think Brian Scholes is bringing a couple of the guys from the Daiwa, whether Japan or wherever it is. I think they're coming today. But Brian will surface fish here today for them.
That's his forte, isn't it? He's well known for that.
He's an exceptionally, exceptionally patient surface angler.
I'm not.
I'm not bad, but I struggle. I want to put my bottom bait rods out. I have to just take my surface rod. If I take my bottom bait rods out, I'm instinctively wanting to put a bottom bait rod out as well.
I saw on your Facebook the other day, you mentioned Brian Scholes and saying you'd been out and bought a vice.
What
was that for? It was a big proper, you know, hardware vice.
Yeah, it was a vice. Most of the time when I'm floater surface fishing, I tend to side hook a rubber mixer or whatever on a wide, you know, gape hook or whatever, and that suits me perfectly. But eventually, fish do get a bit spooky about that. And I've never been happy. It's never worked for me how anglers sort of hair rig, just a normal hair rig bit of. That's never worked for me at all. I don't know why, it just hasn't worked for me. And what Brian came up was with this clever little idea of doing a little a loop, and then having a bait band, pulling the two pieces of braid through the eye of the hook, then putting it back and tying it in a loop. It gives it a bit of flexibility, so you're not pulling the bait band too tight, and it creates that little bit of flexibility where the fish is hooking itself. You can't do it by hand, you have to have the hook gripped securely. And the only way to do that is to get yourself a vice. So I nipped into the good old Barnett's in York, bought myself a vice, and I'm one of these OCD people, literally tied about 20 up one evening. Fantastic. And you know, it's just that little bit of an edge. I can't sit and think that somebody's doing it better than me, you know. It will drive me mad, you know. Baits and things like that I can live with, but if somebody's got a technique that they're doing better than me, it would drive me mad, you know. I won't ever change my key bait or my twist or whatever, but when I see someone like Brian smashing it up on floaters,
you want to know why.
I want to know why. And you know, to be honest, nowadays floater fishing is, compared to what it was, nowadays you've got the great big bolt machines. It's like, you know, it's so much easier. It used to drive me mad chasing the fish round. You'd have one bite, you'd strike, miss it, and then spend another 2 or 3 hours doing it again. That's not for me. Nowadays, bolt machines, get them feeding, overcast, draw it in, they hook themselves, fantastic. And that's floater fishing for me.
Yeah. And the old type bolt machines have just come back out, haven't they?
The old type bolt machines. I never got the square ones. They tended to tangle occasionally for me. I think I use the 50 gram, the new Nash one, 50 gram. I mean, I think they've got one that's 125 grams. I mean,
That's
ginormous.
I'll be using one of them on my 13-foot rods and smashing it to the middle.
I mean, again, floater fishing is, again, it's an absolutely underrated tactic that people just don't know. I mean, the guy next to me, that to me wasn't floater, he was stork, he was just casting a single soaked mixer type thing. It was a chunky cat, big pellet. And that was absolutely brilliant. And he's had three today. Just, I mean, he was here this morning. He's had three over the day. But he was, I mean, fair play to him. He stood up all day and he's had three fish stalking them. Now, personally, I would be feeding a lot more mixers out and letting them self-hook.
Yeah.
But the thing with the stalking is you can fish straight through 12, 15-pound line because you are just waiting for them to pick that mixer up. Whereas you ain't going to get many bites on 15-pound line here or, with a controller. They're just spooky.
Yeah. Something, someone spooked some of this bird life around here. It's making a bit of a racket.
It is absolutely a racket.
Yeah. Yeah, sort of, we've got the kingfishers around here.
There's a kingfisher comes out and goes across, usually in the morning, not at night. It comes straight across in front of you. Absolutely beautiful. There's everything here. There's it's a stunning place. I mean, that's why I come carp fishing. You know, sometimes it's nice. You know, sometimes it's nice not even to catch. Sometimes it's nice just to sit there and just have a day of relaxing and not catching. You can't relax when you're catching fish after fish after fish. It's impossible.
Yeah, I've had a day. You know, relaxing is good, but once it's on,
yeah,
you've got to be on it. And like you're having to say, yeah, feed, you catch, you feed more. Maximising.
Yeah, because this opportunity may not come again. You know,
yeah.
A week from now or a month from now, things will change massively, you know, and you've got to maximise your opportunities. So, you know, I could very easily have had six or seven or eight fish here today and left it at that. But there's, it's a red letter day, isn't it? It's a red letter day.
Yeah, it is maximising. And we've got, what, rest of September, October, November. Are you carrying on this lake?
Yeah, I shall generally fish on this lake. I don't do tutorials as such. I don't have the time, to be honest, or the inclination at the moment. But I've got four booked purely and simply for charities. There's one, obviously, to raise money for the Carp Society. There's one for Keith Jenkins' daughter. Oh, no, sorry, granddaughter. There was that charity. Then there was one for the ACA. And one. I've got four charity fishings where I'll take an angler fishing. It might take him here, might take him somewhere else. I mean, with tuitions, I don't find I can fish and teach somebody to fish as well. I can't.
And when I've done them, I've not tried. It's all about client.
Yeah.
You know, I've not even put rods out on some of them.
Yeah, I don't want to fish. I want to sit with him or her. Yeah. I want to, you know, they want to catch fish. I want to. Can't divide my attention because to me, if I did, I'm not fishing effectively myself, and I'm not fishing effectively. I'm not bothered about fishing at all. I'd rather do it properly or not at all. So, you know, when I take people on fishings, when it gets to dark, I will chuck them out, but generally in the day and things like that, I would rather that they were fishing and I wasn't, because there's only one good swim. There's the best swim and there's the second best swim. So if I'd turned up today and we were both fishing, I'd be thinking, well, do I put him in the best swim and kick myself later, or do I put myself in the best swim and feel a bit guilty later? If he's fishing, I'd put him in this swim and dropped him there next at night. So, you know, it's a lot of people ask me to do tuitions. I just genuinely don't have the time.
Yeah, I've same, you know, since we've done the carp cast and made it, how can I put it? Well, basically put, Jamie as well, you know, just put his names up there, and, you know, we've had, both of us are quite a bit. I had one this week, some chap from Somerset.
Really?
Yeah, which is...
For tuition?
Yeah.
Wow. And he came up here?
No, I had to knock him back, unfortunately, just, right. You know, for the same reason, I just haven't got the time and...
That's a hell of a drive, Somerset.
Yeah.
We're getting down to is that sort of
near France?
It's down south, isn't it?
Watford.
Yeah, it's cost the fuel. The fuel's far more expensive down there.
Yeah, that's what I like that new van I've got. So good on fuel. Whoa. I don't watch the speedo when I'm driving. I watch the fuel gauge. I'm not that tight, but
goodness me, yeah. You want to try driving a Jeep?
Oh, does that guzzle?
Yeah, about 30 to the gallon, isn't it? 165,000 miles a year. You don't buy a Jeep and worry about petrol
or
diesel. You're buying it for reliability. You know, it's a fishing wagon, isn't it? You know, yeah. I look at all these guys who've got the. It's very carpy now to have these. What are they? The Vito Bigfoot. What's Jamie got?
Oh, Jamie got a big. Camping pikey wagon, I call it.
Yeah, but they are very carpy, but they are they're too big.
Expensive. Yeah,
yeah, they are a big old.
They are luxurious. I've seen inside, Jamie.
Fantastic.
It's perfect. I mean, they went all around Europe, around Lake Bled, and
yeah, I saw that they had some amazing fish, didn't they, Reedy? And
oh yeah, he's out at Rainbow at the minute, Reedy.
Yeah, I think they had some smashing fish, haven't they?
Yeah, I mean, I think he's on a mission to catch a fish bigger than he is. You know, he quote for the scarf.
Well, I think he probably can do. Yeah, yeah. I remember him taking a picture of my decade fish when he worked for Nashi. Yeah, 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 yeah. He took the pictures for me.
Yeah,
that was his nice days of Nashi. Yeah, now he works at NAS, is it?
The Northern Angling Show. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's going to be coming around soon, April this year, I believe.
Yeah, I think it's at the beginning of April. It'll be the last show, and well, I'm fully biased. I'll let Jamie and NAS announce it, but I know there's. Well, just to everyone, get yourself there. It's, I think, huge. Won't do it justice. And fair play to them. This is what, NAS fifth one?
Fifth one, must be fourth or fifth one. Probably fifth one.
Yeah. I'm thinking it's the fifth, to be honest. But yeah, from...
Last year was incredible. Yeah, it was a real big show. I've never... You know, that's as busy as I've seen it for a long time.
Yeah. What got me is the amount of people who were spending money there and walking out with like bags, and unless everyone had nicked it, but walking out with.
I think what amazed me was how many people had never been to a conference before.
Yeah, yeah.
That did amaze me, which shows you've got something right. It's Northern for a start, so I think the people who had not been to conferences, I don't think the Southerners who had not been to a conference that drove up there, but there was a huge amount of people from the North who
won. The Midlands as well.
And the Midlands who were prepared to drive to that show. It was an excellent show.
Yeah, and we've had good support from the trade now as well. Obviously, like, you know, Nash has been there all the time. You know, we've got, you know, Fox there, you know, Corda.
Yeah, that's
Sticky, and you know, I think JRC are going to be there the next one again. Well, I'm just looking at the time. We have rambled on quite a lot.
We have, mate. It's 8 o'clock. I think it's time my rods came in. To be honest, I'm
waiting for that one last.
No, I think if we hung on a bit more, we'll catch one. But to be honest, I've had enough. I've caught enough carp today. In fact, to be honest, it takes me back years ago when I read Carp Fisher. There was an interview with Ian Booker, and it was one of Tim's superb interviews. And I remember reading it. This would be probably 86, and the interview went on, and Ian Booker said, "And I had 6 20s in a day." I remember thinking, no, what he meant, 6 20s in a season. You know, I thought, because though you didn't catch 6 20s in a day. And then I read it and I realised, it was. He'd had 6 20s in a day from Darrenth when he was baited up. I've just realised today, I don't think I've ever had 8 20-pounders in a day. You know, I've had some massive catches at Willow Park, massive catches at Catch 22. I've caught stacks of fish from Three Lakes and... Jurassic Park, but I don't think I've ever caught 8 20-pounders in a day. So that's my Ian Booker moment. I can, I've had enough. I think you need to go and think. Whoa.
Yeah. Go home, clean up in the shower, a big hearty meal, and
I shall go home and I shall do a bit of exercise.
Is winding 20 odd carp in not enough exercise?
No. I shall go home, do half an hour on the exercise bike, do my abdominals. Have some clean food, some rice, beans, and then that's it. And then I shall probably die.
Then 5 minutes sleep, and then off to work tomorrow.
Yeah, 5:50. I'll be, the alarm clock goes at 5:05, and I'll be on that train. And it's Throwback Thursday.
Yeah. Oh, so you've got 82 pictures to post.
No, I've got some unusual ones. People find anything that's particularly amusing, so I always try to put. Maybe one fish picture, one tackle picture, and then two or three that are really amusing, because that who wants to see another picture of another carp and another one and another one?
There's one, I think it was a week or two back, looked like you were on holiday somewhere hot, you're all dressed in denim in your best catalogue pose.
Oh yes, that was my George Michael pose. It was quite funny actually, because when I was in it was actually in Tenerife at the time, and I used to go running in these shorts. And these men used to wave at me, and I thought, wow, how friendly these guys are.
I know where this is.
And then I realised that they weren't waving at me because they wanted to talk. Well, they did want to talk to me. I realised that I was running along the gay beach. Nothing wrong with that, of course. But I realised that maybe, you know, lycra shorts and jogging along that beach were probably not the best thing. But I never realised that was a gay icon. Yeah.
Well, it's got to be a compliment knowing that men and women want you.
Brilliant, mate.
Yeah, I think we're going to end this before we get even worse.
Yeah.
So, thanks for spending this time inviting us down to your syndicate and catching a cart live for us.
Yeah,
Julian exactly. Cundiff.
Thank you very much.
Excellent.
Listen to the Carpcast on iTunes and subscribe for the podcast app on your iPhone or iPad. For Android users, find us on the Stitcher Radio app. Go to Google Play and download Stitcher Radio for podcasts. Add us to your playlist and click listen to hear us anytime you like. Don't forget to enable offline listening if you wish to save your data on the bank. We're also available on the SoundCloud app under The Carpcast, or check our website at www.thecarpcast.com. Remember, listening through an app will recall where you were up to when you get that screamer, or you could always make a whip. The fish, of course.
So big thank you to Jules, a popular guest and always got time for everybody, and what a nice fella.
Yeah, and a couple of firsts for a Carpcast interview there as well. Did you enjoy the fish being caught and... Also, the first one of an interview carrying on while Jules relieves himself against a tree, which was the microphone picked up better than what I expected.
He had a bit of a red letter day as well, didn't he, that particular day? So,
yeah, it wasn't hard to see. I was, to be honest, struggling to concentrate on what I was there to do. There was just carp splashing all around us, and I was surprised they didn't catch more, to be honest, while we were there. The fish were just going mad. But 23 fish in a day, 8 20s, red light a day.
Well done, Jules. I've got a listener's question here. Somebody sent me a message. It's about a lake that we advertised last year, St. Amand, Christoph's Lake.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the family lake where you get the farmhouse and stuff. Go back to some of our earlier episodes if you want to book it for next year. Chap there just came back from St. Amand. I was fishing one rod just at the bottom of a sandbar, which was very productive. The second rod was in an area of silt where I saw fish fizzing every day. I kept the bait going in but couldn't get a bite. I kept having liners and the tip was bouncing round. I was fishing a pop-up helicopter style and always use PVA foam, so I'm confident that it was well presented. Have you ever found this to happen, or what could he do differently next time in a similar situation? So have you ever had that? You're catching well on one rod, but the other rod, there's fish all over it, or fizzing, loads of liners, but just can't pick up a fish?
Ask us a question.
You remember, I'll use the Woolpack as an example. You remember, what was it called? Was it the teabag swim?
Yeah.
On Lake Six. Now, there's a lot of deep water in front of that, and in all that side of the lake, you would see bubblers. You know, I've put a rod down there several times, and, this question has just described, I've had twitches, indication, but no runs, until I try something different. I chucked a worm on, and after 5 minutes, I caught an eel. Then another. It might not be carp that's given the indication. I've not been to St. Amand. I don't know if there's any of these Prothon chats or any other nuisances in there, but if you're not getting pickups on well-presented baits and that, it might not be carp that are causing it.
I agree. I had a situation very recently, actually, on the Nash Lakes at Royston. There seems to be a lot of silverfish in there. And what I found was I was using the cultured hook baits, which the Nash baits, which I think are absolutely brilliant, but they have paste molded around like a wafter, and these small fish, and these are not super small, they may be like, I don't know, like 5 inch long, 4 or 5 inch long, but seem to be millions of them. They were attacking the paste, and I was getting real, you know, like sudden tip movements on the rod, the bobbins going, you know, sort of 2-3 bleeps up, 2-3 bleeps down. It was happening constantly, and it was more because In the end, I stopped using the cultured hook baits on it, and it did slow it down, although I was still getting these annoying beeps, and 100% it wasn't carp. So if you were out in the middle of a lake, you know, and you were getting that same sort of indication, you naturally might think it was carp, but perhaps, like you say, there was something else feeding in this silt. I know there is a lot of silverfish in St. Armand, because I know it's a really good place to take the family and stuff, float fishing and all that. So I know there is. But yeah, I would, my first assumption was that it probably isn't carp.
Yeah, man, at least he was catching off his other rod, so he was getting the action, was catching carp. Hopefully got a bigger two as well.
Yeah, I mean, you can try different rigs. So using a helicopter rig with a pop-up. I mean, possibly it was softer silt down there. If it, you know, was carp, they may have been feeding deeper than where you were. So the first thing I would try, I mean, your two main things that you can try is if you're fishing a bottom bait, try a pop up. If you're trying to pop up, fish a bait on the deck, you know, just in case it may be a softer silt and the fish are burying their heads in after some bloodworm or whatever they're feeding on. You know, that's my first go to. You know, if I'm getting lots of indication on the stiff link or something, I'll maybe try popped up stiff link, I'll maybe try a bottom bait, get something right on the deck, and vice versa. You know, if it's getting messed around with a lot on the bottom, I'll try popping it up a bit or some sort of. It always seems to be when you're in tricky situation, using a stiff hook link can sometimes be the different, and vice versa, using something like the armor, what's it called, the stretchy hook link, trigger link. Yeah, I know that's made a difference on a few lakes where you know, people can't convert bites, and all of a sudden they put the trigger link on, which is basically like an elasticated hook link. That can be the difference sometimes, but just trying something completely different to what you're doing. But I do know that trigger link has been the difference with people converting bites and not converting bites.
I can certainly vouch for that. And I'll be honest, it's not the easiest material to work with, which I think is a good thing, because not many people can be bothered to use it. And it's still an edge, even though it's been out for... How long has it been out? It's got to be over 10 years plus now.
I must admit to using it very infrequently, but I remember we were fishing on Cromwell one time and you cast it out and caught one straight away and I blanked.
Yeah, I don't think it was cast straight away. I remember waiting till dusk and the person fishing opposite was not looking and blasted one over. But yes, I did catch on the trigger link there. And that is a tricky pressured venue, so proof of the pudding.
Yes, definitely. We've got another question here. Joseph Walters, I see.
Ask us a question.
Yeah, he's sent us a question in. He says, it's about a lake he's fishing at the minute. Says that he's struggling a bit. The lake has a stock of around 60 carp up to 29 pounds. The average is a high double. He's done 7 nights, only managed a 15-pound common off the surface, and is blank during the nights. Sometimes he does single nights, other times, you know, a couple of nights at a time. The lake is a large old coal mine, and is very weedy with the odd clear patch in the siltweed, and is about 100 foot deep in the middle. That's deep. Has a small bay that goes out to about 15 foot, and the lake does a lot of bites at around 30 to 40 yards out, fishing at about 16 foot. He's tried different baiting tactics, from scattering boilies to a tight particle area, but only resulting in 10 bream. Yuck. Most fish are coming on pop-ups and wafters. Is there any advice that could give him some help on this lake? Interesting question. Well, it's an interesting question, as we both went, at the same time.
Yeah. Bait. I'm thinking, maybe they don't like your bait on that lake. Does it say how big the lake is? I mean, it's 60 carp in 2 acres is very different to 60 carp in 100 acres. You know, fish every 7 nights, if it's 100 acres, is probably pretty normal. I'm guessing it's not that big if it's an old coal mine.
In 100 foot in the middle, that's some depth. Also getting into that time of year where I don't be afraid to fish down 20, 30, 40 foot.
No,
you know, but the deeper we get towards Christmas, follow them down.
You want to catch where other people are catching from. I mean, he says the lake's been doing bites around 16 foot. So, I mean, that's where I'd be fishing. I'd be fishing the depths that other people have been catching in.
You're definitely going to work. Mine, depths can, especially this time of year, they can change. I mean, we've had Rob Hughes on it. Was it way back on three where he's talking about thermoclines? It's this time of year where they experience the changeover, where the layers mix and then basically swap over.
Yeah, I mean, the first thing I'm trying to do is to get on fish. So, I mean, keep your eyes peeled, get up at first light, you know, make sure you're watching the lake on dark and look for where the fish are. You're not going to catch unless you're fishing on fish. That's the first thing. If I'm fishing on fish and if I know I'm on fish and feel like I should be catching but I'm not catching, then I start to look at tactics and bait, you know, is the bait that I'm using the right bait for this water? You know, what's everybody else catching on? Kind of get me confidence, you know, kind of use something that I know is working on the lake just to get my confidence, and then find out if it is the bait or not that they don't like. You know, that the easiest way around that normally is to put you know, hemp and corn in. There's no fish that don't eat hemp and corn, and fish, you know, fake corn on the hook. I mean, that's quite often a go-to. You know, that, you know, there's nothing wrong with it. Get some confidence, you know, start to get a couple of bites. I mean, what time of day are the fish coming out? It says you're doing nights, but I mean, if you're fishing nighttime and getting off for work at 7, 8 o'clock in the morning and all the fish are getting caught at 11 a.m., then, you know, you might not be there on the bite times. Try and find out when people are catching. Maybe try and get in swims after people have caught, you know, to like start. I'd be starting at the basics. You know, I'd be using a rig that I know's work on a bait that I'm really confident in. I'd be trying to get in the pegs where most people are catching from. You know, as a starting point. Once I start to get a few bites, I'd then start doing my own thing a little bit more. But sometimes when you're struggling, it's go with the safest option at first, I think. You know, until you start getting a bite and your confidence, right, I've had a bite on that bait, the bait's not a problem, as you know, so I can start working my own problems out. It sounds like you're doing everything right, being aware of the depths and stuff that other people are catching at. You say it's very weedy. I mean, I can't think there's much weed in anything deeper than 16 to 20 foot.
It's probably, I'm thinking it is, it's going to be marginal weed. But also, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but every deep lake I've ever fished, and I've fished quite a few, has had one thing in common. The fish like to show.
They like to show, and they like the margins. So, definitely. Yeah, keep your eyes peeled. I mean, make sure you're fishing on fish is you know, the biggest thing.
He's doing something right, to it. Just looking, he's caught 10 bream, so he's doing something right bait and rig wise.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with the rigs.
No, like you've just said, it's go back to the starting point. Rigs you're confident in, bait you're confident in, and try and put them in the right spot and watch what other people are doing. You know, if you've got friends on the lake, pool your knowledge and do research, and you know, do not get disheartened, because deep water's coming to their own through the autumn, and you know, fish it right up to Christmas and beyond. If we get mild weather, it will fish, trust me.
As we said earlier, it's our Christchurch Carpcast coaching social coming up, and your chance to fish with me and Frank Warwick. We're going to be there. There are still a few places left. It doesn't look like the lake's going to be that busy when we're there. We've got the lake to ourselves, and we're deliberately not filling it up. Because it's a big time of year. Christchurch's been fishing its head off over the last few weeks. There, one lad had 340s last week. There's been a few upper 40s caught. Some of them are commons. It's a fantastic lake. We've got fired up barbecues there as well. Richard's going to come down, do all the food. It's going to be a great time. You can learn what some of the deep depths, listen to some of the great stories Frank Warwick's got over a few beers. It's going to be a fantastic weekend. If you are interested, as I said, there are a few places left and we're not filling the lake up. So it's going to be a good weekend. It's on the 8th of October, is it, Mark, that weekend?
7th, 8th, and 9th of October.
We're there from the Friday to the Sunday. The cost is £250 per person. You can have a fantastic weekend. If you want to see the previous Copcast socials, there are videos of them on our Facebook page. You can go to our website, www.thecarpcast.com. You can just pay a deposit or pay the whole lot on there, and it guarantees a place. We're gonna shut it off because I'm looking forward to fishing this one. It's a decent time of year for that lake. It fishes really well in October. The weights are going to be really big. The fish that are coming out now are all at decent weights, so it's going to be a fantastic weekend. Get in touch with myself or Mark, or just go direct to the website and you can do it.
Don't hang about because there's not a lot of time.
There isn't a lot of time. No, it's coming up in a few weeks' time. So if you want to do that, then that's where it is. Moving on, Mark, what's next?
What's next? We've not done a true review for a while. Should we do one?
True review.
Yeah, I've got one in mind. I got asked a question the other day why I've not done any true reviews on any JRC products, as I've been sponsored by them now for, well, since earlier on this year. Yeah, my reply was simple. It's because I wanted to actually use this stuff and give it a good test first, make sure it wasn't going to fall to bits, because I can generally do that with products. I can break them. And I don't want to also give the impression that, oh, yeah, I'm going to plug JRC stuff, give them true reviews just because of that. I want to use them and, basically have a bit of a credibility first. Although I'm just looking, because I'm going to do the JRC Blox Compact Bivvy. Autocorrect have changed it to the Blox Compact Divi. I'm quite surprised I don't see more of these on the bank, to be honest. Well, just a few stats about it. You've got the 10,000 Hydrotex waterproof material. It's a lightweight central block design. You know, tape sealed seams, two-way door, back vents, Mozzie mesh, which for me is essential. You've got your stone poles that go on the front, heavy-duty ground sheet. You can get your pegs supplied in the carrier bag. You're 100% nylon and 210D, whatever that means. But what I can say from actually using one of these myself is it is absolutely rock solid. And honestly, mate, I would put it in the Titan territory for stability and rock solidness. I've had it up earlier this season on hiking in a couple of ridiculously strong winds. Once you get it all pegged down, stone poles in, it doesn't budge an inch. What I like about it too, it's not overly tall, but I'm a big chap. And it's tall enough I can sit on the end of the bed chair and I'm not got my head sticking through the roof. And the retail price of it is goes around £260, although you can get it cheaper from that around. And my review on this one is it is a product I cannot recommend highly enough. It also fits in, because it says compact, it fits in my wide bed chair quite comfortably. You know, it doesn't leave a massive amount of room, I'll admit, but there's room back as and underneath the bed chair for everything I need. And if I can put it up and down and I've not damaged or broke it or destroyed it yet, I think that's a good recommendation for everyone. If you see me on the bank, come up and have a look at it. I'm sure I know JRC are doing quite a few of the winter shows. They're definitely at the Northern Show. So, you've not seen this at Bivvy, have you? Or did you see it on Royston?
I did walk down to your swim, yeah I did. I mean, it's this time of year, I'm looking forward to seeing everybody's new products at the minute. The Nash stuff was released. I'm going down there on Friday to have a look at their stuff. New Titan looks ace, I think. I quite like the Tracker one. You've seen those skull caps that Tracker do on top of their bivvies now, which I think is quite a good idea, you know, to make a second skin to help with condensation and push the peak out further to stop the rain coming in the door. There's a lot of new stuff out this year, so I'm going to be having a look at all of it at the shows over this winter. It all looks pretty decent.
Yeah, I've seen those skull caps, and I've got to be honest, my first, probably unfair, but my first thought was, have they done that because the seals all leak? So they need to put an extra layer on?
I don't think that's the case, no.
I know it ain't, I'm only jesting. It was just my first thought, but Yeah, I mean, that's what all the winter shows are like. The Carp Society one's going to be the first one in November down at Sandown. Have you, you're obviously doing the Northern Show, have you any plans to attend any of the others? Have Dash hit you up for them?
Yeah, I generally try and avoid doing the shows if I can, but there's some people we want to meet. There's some people we want to meet for the show. They're going to be at some of the other shows. Northern Anglia show is looking huge for this year. We've got we're going to be starting to run adverts on here for the next Northern Anglia show coming up very soon. The ticket launch is the 1st of October, so probably start running adverts from there, and we'll be filling you in on all the new stuff for this year. But it looks like we've got potentially an really exciting new sponsor for the show that's not one of the actual companies. It's somebody that does something a bit different that I think everybody would be interested in. I can't say any more, but we've got two of the biggest companies in fishing, full stop, that look like they're joining us this year. We've just got to cross a few T's and dot the I's, and then we'll be letting you know what's going on with the new show. But yeah, it's looking very good, and I've just negotiated a Carpcast ticket as well. So when you purchase, you know, we do the VIP packs. It's looking like we're going to be including our clothing in with some of these VIP deals at the event. So yeah, you'd be pretty much getting a free ticket and like a Carpcast hoodie or t-shirt or something as well. Is how it's going to work out. More, as I said, more information on that probably early October. We'll start to tell you about what you can do.
Oh, is there no snippets you can release yet? No tasters.
We haven't started. All right, okay. One of the very large companies that have committed is the Shimano group of brands. Shimano don't attend very many shows. They did one last year for the first time. They have a huge stand at the Northern Anglia show this year. We've moved into the bigger hall at the back. It's going to be ace. So yeah, I don't want to go too much on it now because we will be running adverts from October. But yeah, it's certainly going to be one not to be missed this year. We put 10,000 people in there last year, and there's going to be a lot more this year, and there's a lot more content, a lot more stuff going on. So yeah, it's all good. Getting distracted by Facebook, you know, they're still kicking off here, personal attacks on Tom, and it is getting me annoyed, to be fair. It's getting really annoyed.
I thought I had on the way home from the lake today, and you know, over in America they do roasts.
Yeah.
Should we do a roast of carp fishing?
Yeah, maybe.
Oh, would that upset everybody? Do you think everyone can take a roasting?
I don't know. I don't know. I mean, there's enough drama going on at the minute without stirring it up even more.
Well, it's all right. We'll do it. We'll play it at a slightly different speed so no one can recognise our voices. And blame someone else.
I'm sure there'll be more about this later on. But, Carpcast social, get involved in that. Keep an eye out for the Carpcast VIP tickets for the Northern Anglia show. And worth a look, I've noticed that we've got on this time, Rob Hughes. He was on last week's show. He's been doing a load of videos on the Fox Facebook page, busting carp fishing myths. I've noticed he tagged me in one last week. Did you notice that?
Worth a look.
Yeah, I got tagged me one as well. Funnily enough, it was about tight or slack lines. Have we covered that before?
We've mentioned it once or twice, yeah. Once again, proving that it's pretty much a waste of time. Even if you're trying to get your line slack through the swim, it very rarely is slack through the swim.
Rob is a man who's done all his diving, which is where he gets his information from. First hand, you know, Rob is the authority on this sort of one. Did you see the one he did about... you know, when you cast out, actually, you know, how to sink your line?
I've not gone through them all yet. I've made a watch list of things that I want to have a look at, but no, I've not done it yet.
Yeah, and I've started watching a lot of other things. I'm up to date with the Vikings series now. So I'm going back to watching fishing. Until Walking Dead's on, anyway.
Well, worth a look. Check out the Fox videos. Some other worth of look. Netflix have just released a series called Stranger Things, which is a very strange series. I don't know if you've heard of it, but if you haven't, I won't ruin anything about it. But it's pretty interesting.
Worth a look.
Watching too many box sets, because I just been once a star, that's it. I binge watch them and it's not good.
I did that with the Vikings, and I want to be a Viking when I grow up. In fact, I'm going to get healthy and what have you. You know, buff myself up a little bit, get on the ketogenic diet that you're on, then apply to be an extreme Viking. I think I've looked the part. What do you reckon?
Yeah, definitely. You could pull it off. We've mentioned it a few times on this, and the phone's not rung yet, has it? So we'll plug away. We'll keep plugging away. Tell us what's in Carp Talk this week.
Carp Talk? Oh, it's a collector's issue. I'm in it. No, not really. I've just got a little article through LA Carp at the back. Oh, if you use LA Carp, just remember you can get a discount if you use the code CARPCAST10. Anyway, back to Carp Talk. That's what we're doing. This is the Carp Talk that is actually out currently. There's a review of the final of the British Carp Angling Championships won by Mark Bartlett and Kev Hewitt. There's £57 from Eric's Willows. Remember we mentioned it last week?
I was given some duff information. It wasn't £60. The fish that got caught, it wasn't even the big fish, it was one of the others. 57, which wow. is absolutely ridiculous. What a cracking lake. What else in there?
Yeah, there's 50 from Crackers Meadow, Home Fen and The Avenue. We'll not talk about any of those venues, I don't think. Already been there. There's, you just alluded to, Lynchill's Christchurch switches on, throwing up 340s in a few days, and we know there's others as well. And features, you've got former world record holder Martin Locke explains why there's only one rig you really need. And Martin Locke is someone I have a lot of respect for. He's been around for a long, long time. Chris Eggleston gets a lesson in the highs and lows of chasing a special fish. And we know we've both been there, and then I go in there as well. But, I don't want to mention that on that article, there was a picture of a couple of fish in there, and I did a little video that LA Carp put out, and I was a victim of the internet trolls.
Really?
One of the fish, quite, really, really long fish, as I was, it was £32, as I was playing it, the first glimpse I saw was maybe about, 25, 30 yards out. The line's going in at one spot, and the fish's tail broke the surface of the water about 3 foot behind it, and I'm thinking, oh my God, that's a lump. It's still a big fish, just a long and lean one. And someone made the comment, £32, lol.
Well, it's basically saying it's not £32. Well, every fish you hold looks small because you're big.
Yes, I'm a bit of a large chap. Yeah, there's a couple of other people followed suit as well. It's quite amusing, actually. I thought I was going to put a humorous reply about it, so I really can't be bothered. They who I deal with from LA put a comment on anyway, and basically shut them down. And another comment, which I'm not affected by any of these trolls or anything, but one thing that did piss me off, in this video, the fish has a little flip, so it's put down in the mat. Someone needs to teach me how to handle fish, or words to that effect. That pissed me off a bit.
Well, put your head up there. These internet trolls, they will find a reason to have a little pop, as we know. There's a lot of people are extremely pathetic that post on the internet. Extremely pathetic. Yeah. Probably got no voice in real life, and they're the troll pedos, I call them. They're just don't give them the attention. That's all they're after. Just looking for a little rise because of their sad, pathetic lives. Nothing better to do than say negative shit on the internet. Then you are a toxic person. A very toxic person who's probably never going to make a partner happy. Probably going to be alone all your life and sit there getting your kicks out of whinging on the internet. Good luck to you, you pathetic, toxic waste of space. That's all I've got to say on the matter.
I did look at the profile of one of them, and I did notice he's got pictures of his young son up, a toddler who, just saying, but he looks a lot like I did at that age.
Anyway, there's competition as well. Competition in the Carp Talk. £530 worth of Signet baiting poles and £500 worth of Avid Terabyte bed chairs to give away. We want our Carpcast listeners to win these prizes. So many few people actually bother taking the time to cut the form out, fill it in, go and buy an envelope, go and buy a stamp, because nobody sends letters anymore, so you won't have one in your house. Got to go to the post office, get it posted, and you might just be surprised in what comes back. £500 worth of gear. Avid, £530 worth of Signet baiting poles. Get yourself in there. And if you would like a copy where you can find all this stuff in Carp Talk, you can get it digitally online to any computer, PC, Apple Mac, iPhone, Android, any device you can think of. Get it from www.pocketmags.com. You can also get the print version out today, every Tuesday. Costs only $1.99. There's a stockist locator on the Carp Talk website. And just go and harass your local news agents and ask them to order it in for you every week, and it'll be waiting. Obviously, you can save 51p by, or 50p by buying the digital version. It's only £1.49. So yeah, check that out. We'll be back next week with a new guest. Thanks to Julian's on this one. We'll also have Rob Hales with the actual facts of the probably the most controversial fish that's ever been caught in the UK.
Before we leave Carp Talk, that was the current issue, and I'm sure the next issue will be good, and it will have all the details about the capture and story behind this fish.
Yes, of course, and we'll be talking more about that next week, no doubt, when we know the exact weight. So until then, we'll catch you later.
See you then.